not cold yet. I run a couple of degrees warmer than most people. It'll get to me, but not, it's not there yet. Oh, I better turn my phone on.
Do you want some coffee, Bart? Have you got some?
I did get some, thank you.
Can I say it? It's a plan that nobody's happy with, so it's probably a good plan.
Yeah. The only other option is we had your family.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, there are a couple of us here in Juneau. We're still waiting for the chair and one other person.
Is that Patty?
That's Barb. This is Patty.
Oh, okay. I thought I might have known. This is Garen, Representative Tarr.
Hi.
Hi there. It's a snowy morning in Juneau, right?
Right, but the flight did land, so we're just waiting for Charity and Trevor to get here.
Okay, that sounds really good. I'm just going to be online then.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you know what I might mention, and just since we have a moment here.
Yep.
Remember I had told everyone about Vera Starbar, the woman who's a playwright, and she's done the workshops with AFN on healing through storytelling.
Yeah.
You know, about the trauma and things like that. Well, she's actually in Juneau now, and they're over at Perseverance getting her play all set up. So anyhow, I just thought, you know, if anybody was interested or gets over there at all, they might be able to check it out because it's going to debut in January. And then when they're once we get to town, I'm going to do an event. I'm going to do some kind of an event with them.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, on storytelling and healing. And so, you know, we'd love to have you guys involved or whoever wants to be a part of it.
Okay. Let us know the date of the debut and the date of your event.
I'm going to. Oh, is it the play at Perseverance?
Yeah.
I'm going to that towards the end of January. I'm excited.
Oh, good. That's Barbara.
I was going to ask.
Okay, good. Yes, it's going to be amazing. And, yeah, I think really, you know, important as it makes its way around the state.
I am excited
and
about it.
Which Barb is that?
This is Barbara Thompson.
Oh, hi. Okay, great.
Hi there. If you don't know me, I'm on the State Board of Education.
Okay, great. That's why your name is familiar. Okay. I'm a state representative here from the Anchorage area.
Yes, I do know who you are, and I've seen you on the news, and I know your involvement here, so I'm excited that you're a part of this.
Oh, thank you so much. That's really sweet. I should tell everyone, too, if Patty's still there, she probably got distracted by doing something else.
Yeah, she did.
Okay, I'll wait till we actually start the meeting because there's another piece of exciting information.
Okay. Yeah, people are walking in and out and all over.
Okay. Yeah, I wondered because with the holiday and everything, wasn't sure. And then I wasn't sure if people from Anchorage, if the other legislators were flying into town or what their plan was.
Hey, Garen, this is Laurie. I don't think there are other legislators.
Senator McKinnon's on.
Oh, okay.
I think. So, but we anticipate, this is Patty, that we'll start in about 5 minutes.
Okay, no problem at all. I'm just sitting here doing other work, so it doesn't bother me a bit.
Do you want some?
No, thank you.
If I don't share it,
well, Lori might know the piece of exciting information that I want to share.
Ooh.
Well, and actually, now that I think of it, the Department of Ed folks certainly know about the bill that passed in Congress this week with the repealed No Child Left Behind provision.
Oh, yes. We all know about that and are looking forward to seeing what it really says and what flexibility is offered or not.
Yes. It provides a mechanism.
We're probably going to have that as our January meeting, actually.
Oh, excellent. Because, yeah, it provides a mechanism for funding for the Aaron's Law piece and the convening silence. So for the first time, is my understanding, in a broad sense, that this federal funding will become available for those purposes.
Hmm.
And
I didn't know that.
Health education.
Yeah.
Physical education.
So I've been keeping in touch with Aaron all week because Senator Gillibrand and two other senators, there was a bipartisan bill to provide federal funding for Aaron's Law. But then what ended up happening is in the conference committee, they rolled that provision into the compromise bill. And so, yeah, that happened this week. And so I don't have all the details, but it's certainly good news, thinking there'd be more resources available from somewhere.
Aaron Tarr, Representative Tarr.
Yeah, we were seeing info coming out about that, and I think I'm pretty sure we're going to have that on our January agenda. We just want to make sure that we don't do anything here that would then go against whatever the federal new federal pieces are. So
right.
Yeah.
Representative, I was just I've been looking through it. It's about 1,000 pages long, so I'm not done yet.
Well, I know. I tried to read it myself because I wanted to make sure I had the right bill because I knew this vote was coming up and everything. And, you know, yeah, I didn't do very well myself.
No, we'll get through it. But what I couldn't determine is if there was new money or if it was a there are a lot of components that provide greater flexibility with the money that's provided, which is really huge for us. Rather than kind of pigeonholing it, it allows for it to be used more effectively and efficiently with our school districts. But I couldn't tell yet if there's additional money for these components. So we'll see.
Right. In fact, I think you might be right that it's just that the language has changed. It's not that it's new money, but it's just that money can be used for different things now because of it.
Right. Yeah, so we'll be looking at that. That'll be a big part of our job here over the course of the next few months because, you know, we'll have to do a lot of work. You know, there'll have to be changes to our regulations. We've got to get out from under our waiver and things like that. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to the flexibility that we're being given.
Well, my goodness, I tell you, if there's one profession where the rules are always changing, it is for educators.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, just, you know, every year something different.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, you should be on the board.
Well, I mean, yeah, you know, the idea that there'd be more local control just seems so obvious, so that's such a good thing.
Yeah, but it's all those other details that you're not quite sure what they are yet.
Right. Did anybody see how our senators voted on that bill? Because it passed like 86 to 12 and something, I think. Yeah, it was pretty big.
They were all supportive.
They were? Okay.
Yes.
I thought Senator Murkowski was, but I wasn't sure about Sullivan. Because I think Representative Reingold, she has been sending out some emails. She's not happy. Still says it's like too much federal control. And anyhow, I don't know all the details, so I was just curious. I thought people thought it was a real great step forward.
No, I think generally speaking, people do. Senator Murkowski actually had a lot of work, a big hand in it. She was on the conference committee. She's on the help committee. We worked with her extensively. Karen McCarthy, her staffer, would email us and call us and say, hey, what about this? What about that? And we were able to get some insight. And so, no, she was very, very involved. But the other two voted in favor as well. So.
Thank you, Commissioner. That's really helpful. I'm happy to know that so I can share that.
Yeah.
Welcome. So Trevor and Charity just got in, and we'll give them a minute to get their coats off. And
30 seconds. We're giving them 30 seconds.
Uh-oh. And take a breath.
Thank you, Commissioner. It's always good to see you.
I was glad you guys made it. I mean,
when
you can't see Douglas Island from here, it's hitting me.
That pilot, I could totally tell he was on a time thing because you can always tell. It was like, it was like almost pointed downward. I'm like, all right, we're going for
it. We're going in.
He's one of those experienced pilots.
Somebody told me once that Alaska Airlines pilots have led more people to prayer than any preacher ever could.
That's pretty good.
I've not heard that, but I absolutely agree. I'll never forget that. It was like a German pilot. He literally came in and just went, turned the engines off and just went right down. I'm almost positive.
Navy pilot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, probably, huh?
Like, wow.
We're landing on this stone.
Hard, I hate it. Almost there and you can see things. Yes, and then they immediately just, yes.
Do you have an extra pen by chance?
Yeah. How
are you doing?
All right.
Good. Yeah.
Back in.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right, go for it. Keep going.
Now, where are you?
Where are we at?
Oh, we were waiting on y'all.
Waiting on me.
We were talking about the new federal bill.
So prepared every time.
Yeah.
So actually, it was the first to go around.
How did you have
my very first time with my wife?
I'm so sorry.
I'll go upstairs.
Oh, I'm sorry. No problem. I have paper.
So I think we are ready to get started.
All right. Shall we call this meeting to order?
Yes.
Great. Well, thank you all for waiting for us. We're happy to be here. Let's go around. Has everybody gone around and done the intro, or do we need to do that?
Just for people online, we just
we'll start with Barbara, because it's perfect time now. All right, I wasn't sure if you guys did. Let's make sure everybody on the line knows who's here. So this is the voice of Trevor Storrs, your chair. Go to my left, and we'll go around.
Laurie Morton.
Charity Summer.
Patty Owen, staff.
Barbara Thompson.
Mike Hanley.
And who do we have online?
Garen.
Melanie.
Senator McKinnon.
Amanda Price
and Senator McKinnon. Did we miss anyone?
Yes.
Representative Tarr.
Melanie Sutton.
Anyone else?
Fabulous. Well, thank you all for joining us. Does everybody have the most current agenda? I know there was a few drafts out there, and thank you to Patty for bearing with us and putting this together. So I'll take that as a yes, and everybody, hopefully people online do as well. Lori, I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot because this is your section.
Okay.
Does that work?
Sure.
All right, go for it.
So this morning our first item on the agenda is recommendations training for school staff. Kate Burkhart and I met with Patty and Sharon and went over what is currently ongoing. You may remember from earlier meetings and what is in our internet space that the council earlier this year did an inventory for schools to find out what they were using as training for their staff, particularly with child abuse, and found that almost overwhelming majority of them used the e-learning module. A couple of them used Safe Schools. A couple of them had OCS workers come in and do the training for their staff. But by and large, it was the department's e-modules that they were using. So we went through them some corrections that need to be made, particularly with dating violence and sexual assault. We're looking at revising that module to add in dating violence. And so the first one on our list is suicide prevention training. Kate, I believe, is on an airplane. Sharon has agreed to walk us through that training. Maybe you could introduce yourself, Sharon.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sharon Fischel. I'm an education specialist with the Department of Education. And part of my duties here is working on suicide prevention, school-based suicide prevention. And I work real closely with Kate. I serve on the Suicide Prevention Council for the commissioner, and we do a lot of work together with the Suicide Prevention Council. They provide us with funding for school-based suicide prevention grants, which I talked to you about, I believe, at your first meeting. When Senate Bill 137 came out, which was the required mandatory training for school staff on suicide prevention, we were tasked with putting together a list of trainings that met those requirements. And Kate and I looked at the list we had put together then, and then we narrowed it down to, because that was before everybody started taking it, and now that we know what everybody is using to meet the requirement for staff training, we narrowed the list down to what Patty's passed out to you. The Department of Ed currently has 3 online e-learning modules that focus on suicide prevention. I would say that 99% of our school districts use this as their suicide prevention training for their staff currently. There's an awareness and prevention course, one that focuses on intervention, and the most recent one that was live this year is focused on postvention, what schools can do after a suicide happens to reduce just what steps and stuff that they need to go through. Any questions about our e-learning modules?
What level of feedback have you received on these from teachers? Do they feel like they're meeting their needs? Need more, need less?
We have 2 ways to gather that input. As part of the, initially, the Suicide Prevention Council also had money that was used for Cognito, and they had an evaluation that, you know, just a couple of questions that were asked at the end of when they took Cognito, and so we took those and kind of modified them. So there's a SurveyMonkey that's taken at the end of, that they can take at the end of each of these courses, that's tailored to stuff that they were trained on in that course. And I would say overwhelmingly, the only big complaint that I get about it is that it's 2 hours long. And initially, Senate Bill 137 required the training to be 2 hours long, so we had to create these modules to be 2 hours long. So that's the, you know, everybody, most people like it. They think it's culturally relevant to Alaska. You know, if you want to see some snippets of some of what people have said, I've pulled them out for a report that I did for Kate and the Suicide Prevention Council about what different people are saying. Overwhelmingly, they really feel that they've learned something in this course. They just don't like having to sit through 2 hours. And we've talked about now that the House Bill 44 doesn't require it to be 2 hours long anymore, that we could take at least the first 2 e-learning modules and break them into 1-hour components, so that wouldn't be quite as long. The postvention one would be much harder to do because it's really kind of a training on for administrators and teachers and staff on what to do. But over the response that we've gotten on our e-learning courses has been very positive for suicide prevention. And they're now available also to the public through funding from the council. So we have 500 public seats currently. So if any of you would want to just go on and take one of them, you're more than welcome to do that.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
I recognize the challenge of the 2 hours for a course. Can it feasibly be reduced? And recognizing the importance of this topic and the importance of this training, a balance between time commitment and need for training,
mm-hmm.
can it be feasibly reduced? Or does it need to? I'm just trying to find that balance.
Right,
I don't want
right.
it to reduce it because it's easy.
Right.
And then realize that we're giving some token training that doesn't really meet the needs of our.
You know, I would probably be comfortable in taking it down to 1.5 hours. I don't know if I'd be comfortable going all the way down to 1 hour, but I have to get in there and make sure that the specific parts of what we were trying to get across in each of the training, because in the trainings, we also give them the current statistics and what the law says. And a lot of those slides can be what the law says is going to be totally different now with House Bill 44. So some of those will come out. And so I think that there's some repetition that we might be able to take out of our current slides that we would still be getting the content that is needed across.
Great. Well, and that'd be my recommendation as we pursue that we do what's needed.
Yes.
To have
yes.
adequate professional development.
Oh, yeah.
If it's 1 hour and 50, then it's 1 hour and 50. If it's 2, it's 2. If it's, you know, so.
Right.
So let that be the guide mm-hmm. rather than.
Absolutely.
And maybe, Sharon, or what you're talking about, still keeping the time but just dividing it differently? Did I misunderstand
you? We might be dividing
you?
It different into, you know, like you would take this set and this, you know, in this setting you would do this hour
mm-hmm.
or this setting you would do this or just
mm-hmm.
looking at it as a whole. as to what's repetitive. There's a couple of comments that I've seen that said that there's some repetition, but then some people like the repetition
right.
because they get it better, that, you know, the second time it's in a different spot. So it's a little, it would just take some time to look at it and see how to break it down easily, differently. If that's
Trevor.
Please.
Trevor, this is Senator McKinnon. The only comment I have on the hour length is one of the primary reasons that we wanted e-learning to be available and to qualify for continuing learning credits was to drive people to the free source so that we get continuity across the system. So if we can do that in an hour and a half, that's fine. But we were looking to make sure that some of these things can be continuing learning credit earners. Thank you.
Yes.
Any other questions online from council task force members?
Barbara. Lori.
Oh. Hello.
Hello. This is Garen.
Hi, Garen. I'm going to ask task force members first, then we'll come back.
Okay.
Barbara.
My question is, as I have food in my mouth, excuse me, does the department have the resources necessary to amend these trainings right now and bring them up to speed with the new law and make the changes that might be necessary if we adjust, reduce, reformat, whatever?
We have some funding that we get from the council that could be used toward revising some of that. It depends on how much of a revision it would be. There's a potential of potentially needing some more funding, depending on how much we tear them apart. You know, my time is my time, you know, doing that. If we, all of these modules were created by bringing a group such as yourselves together in a room, going through it, making sure everything makes sense on each of the slides. Barb's probably sat on a few of those reviews herself or popped her head in. And, you know, the cost of bringing some people together might be a little bit to make sure that the reviews and the changes that I've made make sense. Some of those people would be here in town that could do it, like Kate and that kind of thing. So it just depends on how much we go through and break these down, because we could, you know, we can do most of the internal work, most of the work internally, but then we need to send it to our contractor to make the changes on the slides, and that will cost money. And we have some, but not a lot.
Well, I just want to make sure that we are prepared to deal with the resource issue so that we can have whatever we have ready to implement when we need to have it ready. And I know it's not the same cost as creating something from scratch, but making it right for the online delivery.
Just going in and changing what the difference between Senate Bill 137 and House Bill 44, we could cover the cost for that, because we have to do that anyway because the law has changed. But if we start talking about breaking down into different sets of modules and that kind of money, that's where some of the cost might come in.
Okay.
And we'll be talking a little bit more about that with the domestic violence, sexual assault, and dating violence modules, because those are ones that do need to be updated, and the dating violence needs to be added in. So we could just go ahead and say it now, and it's about, if I remember correctly, $25,000 per module hour. So we're looking at between five, if we were looking, for example, between 5 and 10 hours, then we're looking at between $100,000 and $250,000. And I've started looking. So, but there is going to be an expense to that.
Are the teachers that are taking this training from typical grade levels, or?
Currently, the law says 7 through 12,
okay.
And it's teachers, staff, administrators, and specialists that are required. House Bill 44 has a few complications with that, because it says that with the mandatory training paid part of House Bill 44, it says all staff have to take it, with, you know, 50% within 2 years, 100% within 4. So that's the other, you know, part that's with this whole thing. And so we're not exactly sure if it's going to be 7 through 12 staff or if it's going to be all staff. And so, and currently we have several thousand users. This training has exploded our e-learning system right now because we have several thousand learners that have taken one, both, or, you know, we've got the new course that just came up in August, I think, is around 400 or 500 users right now, and the other ones. All of our major school districts are using this. MATSU came on board first, then Kenai, Anchorage came on board in the last year, and Fairbanks has come on board also. So our largest school districts are using this course for their training, for these courses.
And is there a similar way to tell which school districts are having their staff either do this e-learning module or something else on suicide prevention?
Every spring, we can go into our e-learning account and we can determine which school districts and how many from each school district are taking the course. I also send an email out to the ones that are not showing up, to the either the counselors that I know in that district or to the superintendent, asking them which courses they've used. Some of them use the face-to-face training, which, you know, is always the gold standard when you're talking about suicide prevention training, is a face-to-face training. Some of them use Safe Talk, which is a more lay person training. A lot of them are using Gatekeeper QPR, which is on this list, which is a two-hour face-to-face training for more intervention type. Some of them are using Assist, which is on the last page, and that's a 2-day training, but it's really geared to an intervention model. Another one that has come on board this year is Youth Mental Health First Aid, which we have through, we're sponsoring that through a federal grant that the Department of Ed has, and that's an 8-hour training, but it's CPR for mental health, and so it covers substance abuse, it covers suicide, non-suicide, you know, just a lot of different things. So that's a new one that we've added to our list of trainings for those that are taking it, because there is a solid 2 hours on suicide prevention and intervention in that training.
Representative Tarr, did you have a question on the e-learning modules?
Nope. I just was going to let you know that Senator Gardner's staffer, Samantha, is on the line. She had texted me and asked me to make that announcement so it'd be recorded, and I'll make sure to, if I do have any, wait for you to invite non-task force members to participate.
Okay,
thank you.
Welcome, Samantha. Are there any other questions on the e-learning? And then maybe, Sharon, you could, as you started to, take us through some of the other ones on your list, too.
Okay. On the next two on the back of the first page and the beginning of the second page are Connect, suicide prevention and postvention programs. Those are highly recommended by our partners at the Division of Behavioral Health and HESS. James Galanos has been real active in getting those trainings going, so we kept those on the list as our partners. And then Youth Mental Health First Aid. I'm an instructor for that. It's a great course. It's long. It's 8 hours of solid content. But you really know how to help somebody when you walk out of that course. Mm-hmm. If anybody's interested, I'm going to be doing it here with my training instructor on January 20th in this room, actually, if you have anybody who's interested in taking it. And there's, of course, this is happening up in Anchorage and all over Anchorage, Matsu, and the Kenai Peninsula also. And then there's Alaska Gatekeeper QPR, and again, that is also sponsored by the Division of Behavioral Health. It's a 2-hour face-to-face training. I know that the Matsu School District is using that for some of their counselors this year through our suicide prevention grants. Safe Talk is another one that is nationally on the NREL. I'm sure you've heard of the evidence-based practice list. Safe Talk is on that list as an evidence-based model and adhering to standards. And then there's Assist, which is a 2-day training that's more of an intervention training for somebody who is in a crisis of suicide. And we had probably six or seven more on the from the original list that we had put together 3 years ago, but nobody in our state's really using them. These are the ones that our state's using, mm-hmm. that the districts in our state are using, mm-hmm. depending on who their audience is. You know, in the North Slope, they did assist training with their counselors because that's more appropriate for somebody at the school counselor level.
Are there any questions about these additional resources for teachers and staff?
This is Trevor. Do these trainings just teach them about suicide and reaction and risk, or does it also provide any training on how to train students around suicide? Because that's going to be part of the role of some of the teachers as well. So it's not just knowing the topic, mm-hmm. it's being able to teach it. And just because you know a topic doesn't mean you can teach it.
So Safe Talk that's on this list is available for, I think it's 14 or 15 and up. You can deliver Safe Talk training to.
So once you went through this training, it trained you to then train students?
Yes. And then there's also a model with Alaska Gatekeeper, the You Are Not Alone group out of Anchorage, which is a students training trainers peer-to-peer. And they took the Alaska Gatekeeper QPR model and modified it to be used with students. And so that's happening a lot around the state also. Our e-learning modules are primarily to help students understand the signs, recognize clues and triggers as to what's going on with an individual student, and then how to either intervene or get that student to somebody who can, and the same with youth mental health first aid.
Barbara? So the e-learning modules really aren't targeting students at all?
No. And I think with... my understanding is that the suicide prevention, although it's important to train students, it's not necessarily part of what you guys have to come up with is training for students or curriculum for students with this piece. But we do have some things that are going on with that.
And so that's a good point, though, for us to keep in mind, Trevor, is we have training for staff so that they are able to understand all these disciplines and what it means and what to look for. When we get into the curricula for students, then we're also going to need to train staff in how to implement the curricula and be able to help the students. So it's sort of that was good. It's a two-way. Are there questions about these other suicide trainings? So with the domestic violence, sexual assault, and dating violence, we didn't have a curricula to bring forward with the e-learning modules. The e-learning module we talked about at our last meeting is really several years old and does need to be revised, and it does need to have the dating violence added into it. There's a work group that's going to be meeting to be able to make that happen, and I'm hopeful to hear an update about that in January. And, Patty, I apologize. I don't remember about the alcohol and drug-related disabilities training.
The department does have an e-learning module training for teachers on FASD, and so... But as I say, it says FASD, so it's outdated. You know, it's adequate training to meet your needs right now, but it really does need to be looked at carefully and redone.
I think Kate Burkhart was going to take that on with another agency. She made a call, and I forget who it was.
Arctic something.
There's an Arctic Disabilities group out of Anchorage with the university.
That's the one.
Kate put in a call to them, and they were going to provide to her a list of what is currently available, and we'll have that for the January meeting. So I think the ones that we are comfortable with today and is the suicide prevention trainings and the information that you have in front of you, that it is accurate and what's being currently used, with the caveat that Sharon made about the revisions to make congruent the changes from the Senate bill to House Bill 44.
So, this is Barbara. In looking at the list provided, these, with some updating, could be used by any district right now, again, with the updating, to fulfill the requirements of HB 44.
Absolutely.
And, in fact, those on this list are being used to different degrees around the state right now.
Yes.
Okay.
And this was the list that Kate was comfortable in bringing forward as part of the homework assignment from last meeting.
So have you guys on the train, or us even looking at, so when we've talked about these five areas, they're very much linked to understanding of trauma and mm-hmm. resilience. You know, it would be really great if, you know, you had first your 101, understanding trauma and resilience, piece, and then you branch out. And is there a way of creating, whether it's the e-modules or something out there that's highly recommended before you go into these, someone needs a base, and they're not getting in the school and setting that stage and then branching out? Because I think, in the words of Senator McKinnon, part of this bill was created not just to focus on child sexual abuse and Aaron's Law and somewhat Bree's Law, was bringing all these together because there is a common thread. And I would like to make sure that we educate our staff on what that common teachers, what that common thread is.
You know, that excites me hearing you that, because we've talked about that we really need an e-learning course on, you know, trauma and its effects and, you know, all of that. But again, that breaks down to having the funding to create it.
And of course, you don't know until you have the full outline of stuff, but what does it take to create a 2-hour e-module?
So a 2-hour e-module is getting somebody to create the content for it, and get the content to the department, and we put it in a certain formatting for our contractor. They take that formatting and put it in a slide that's auditory and visual. You know, you can read what they're saying and you can hear what they're saying, and it's as interactive as we can make it. And then they put that content in, they send it back to us for review, we bring a team together to review it for content and make sure it, you know, it fits for Alaska and what we need, send it back to the contractor. And sorry, Anna, you've probably heard me say this way too many times. And send it back to the contractor. They put it in their format. We double-check it again, and then it's posted live. So that process can take anywhere from the creation of the content to it actually going live from January. If we started, like, in January with, you know, getting somebody to create the content, we could probably have it live by August. With some dedicated staff time and having somebody putting the content together for us.
What is usually the cost for something like that?
It's $25,000 per hour.
That's what I was mentioning.
Sorry,
per hour of content.
Well, that's a contract
per
I need
module.
To get.
We all want that contract.
Per
hour
module.
Of content, it's about $25,000.
Thank you. That's a good clarification for someone who did not know.
Lori had that same response when
I
said
did
that
the first time I heard that.
I knew I was in the wrong field, but
so at minimum, we're looking at $50,000
for a
two-hour minimum.
Yeah.
And that's the assumption that we've got staff to be able to get us to the point.
Right. And we have for some when I was doing special education here at the department, we have contracted out for people to create the content for us.
Right.
And send it to us, and then, you know, but all of that comes with an additional cost.
And, you know, I'm just going to make a commitment as the commissioner that we're going to do absolutely everything we can we are getting to a point of, you know, kind of some physical impossibility, some necessity to contract out some things to help with that.
Well, and it will help if we keep track somewhere potential costs within our planning, because we have money. So Children's Trust dedicated $25,000. I know Rasmussen, Mental Health, there's other people. We just haven't gone to them and had a discussion because we weren't sure what we're going to. Initially, it was about supporting schools.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it's some of the pre-work that we would want, because I know it will help Charity and I to have that understanding, and then we sit down and start going, who do we have to have conversations with, and how do we create this, and create the pool of funds to be able to create and support.
Mm-hmm. We had also, getting back to your original comment about having a base way to start, all of the e-modules are listed sort of running together. So we had talked about just functionally having a heading like, I don't know, Safe Children's Act. And then somebody could click on that, and then underneath it could pop up all the modules that they would need to take to be able to comply, so that they're not spending 30 minutes going all the way down the list looking
at
different things.
We have 60 trainings, and they're all in alphabetical order. And so trying to find which ones you might need, that's a great idea to try to figure out how to do.
So just some way to highlight, this is what you need for these things, and just an easier way to look at it. Mm-hmm. Are there any comments from task force members online? Anything, Samantha, from Center Gardner's perspective? Representative Tarr?
No, I'm glad that Trevor mentioned that those other funds as potential opportunities, because it seems like one thing, if there is an online training module, much like the suicide prevention one with those extra seats for members of the public, that might be an opportunity to engage parents. If something like that became available, you know, then they could go through and do some of the training themselves. That's my only thought. Thank you.
Trevor? So, logistical questions, and just trying to understand some of this, and if I'm getting too far in the weeds and not us, please let me know. One, how does the state track this? So how do we know, other than getting a certificate, so how do you know school districts are in compliance? Do they send a report and say, we're all safe child, a hunky-dory, as Barbara just said. How is that done?
With Senate Bill 137, there were no compliance monitoring pieces to it. There's nowhere that they're required to let us know that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. It all falls to the policies and procedures that the districts have in place to track that.
But you can go
but
in
I
and
can,
see.
We can go in and see, and you know, I go in and see, you know, and Samantha, our ed associate, will print out the list of all the districts that had somebody sign up to take an e-learning course. So I know those, and from there I send the emails out. And I had all but one district respond to my emails last year to tell me what they were doing.
So
it wasn't required.
There's nothing
required.
Formal. And
for suicide.
For
child abuse, there is. We sent the. For child abuse, there is, this is Laurie, the council sends out information requests. School districts are required to let us know the curriculum that they're using. They're statutorily required to let us know that.
Is there any value in the sense of if we come up with recommendations or maybe other things that do this task force, and I'd love to hear from you, Commissioner, that everything on this is statutory, that we should be knowing what they're doing if we pass this to make sure that they're doing it? Is that a recommendation? And then maybe talk to our legislators who are friendly to this to be working towards that? Or is that more work for the district and yourselves and is not necessary?
Well, there are some components of 44 that will require that. When we look at teacher certification, now this is a component of that. These trainings are, even the renewal of certification. So we do need to develop something along those lines in regards to teacher certification. I could look again and see if there's a, I don't think there's a requirement for us to monitor annually these trainings. But there is, just in regards to that. So,
and that's going to throw another sticky wicket into this whole thing is, you know, now the suicide prevention training, the FASD, and I believe the other two that we're talking about here, in order for teachers to become certified or recertified, they have to show proof of that course being taken. And so we're not sure how we're going to, you know, what's going to be happening with that. You know, is it that everybody has to take an e-learning course because we can track that?
Right.
Or if it's going to be some other mechanism. But then that's going to
expose
our number of users.
Senator McKinnon, go ahead.
Thank you, Lori. On that point right now for continuing learning credits, each district already tracks what teachers do to keep employment with their schools. So is there a way, as far as problem solving, to work with the districts to see how they acquire that information and then the state get copied on it? Because the whole point was people could take any kind of class they want for continuing learning credits. And the thought process behind requiring these particular crisis intervention or preventative measures was that instead of being able to take any class that the teacher wanted to take, that we wanted them to prepare themselves better in the classroom for some of the challenges that they're facing. Does that make sense?
It does. And this is Commissioner Hanley. Senator, are you it is relatively straightforward if when a teacher wants to be recertified to pull up the documents they have from their district and submit those with their certification request. So that's pretty straightforward and already done in some cases. So we could do that easily. Are you suggesting that something more than that?
No, I was thinking there was something in place already at each district that they require and maintain data to keep teacher certifications up. So the department, I would suggest, might consider working with the districts to see how we can access that information if we need to in regards to folding in the online training that we have available or the requirements for sexual assault, teen dating violence, and drug abuse. That could be part of that. We would help them develop however they modify their system for reporting and keeping track of it.
And that makes sense. And we can do that in regards to the certifications that the teachers are required to have, and we can make those connections.
Barbara?
I just have one question, and I certainly may be confusing things, so please tell me if I am. But I guess I'm seeing, if we're going to track some of this information, that some teachers will take these courses for continuing ed credit, but some will not. Does that matter, or does that interfere with tracking, or am I just thinking about something that doesn't have any merit at all for value?
I think to help clarify that, Barb, they can take our online courses for CEU credits for certification, and so a lot of people do that, but they don't have to. But the districts still have their individual school district tracking of what they're taking, so if this person takes this, they have the certificate to show the district that, yeah, I've taken the online course, or they could take a youth mental health first aid course and they would have their certificate for that, or whatever type of course that's on this list, they could get a certificate that they've taken that course.
Okay,
to be
so
able to turn
the district has the information.
They should have the information.
Okay, thank you.
So in the sense of process, if we created the trauma resilience, that first 101 class, it works well. If everything was done on e-module, it would be easy to follow. However, if you've got a school district that does a little bit of e-module and a little bit of this curriculum, so you get the idea, what tool can we use to help districts navigate a process? So I always think of a toolkit. And are we, so we're making one, a recommendation to the Department of Ed, but part of me is like, part of that recommendation would be some type of toolkit of how does the school district enact the safe child legislation, and what's the process like? We recommend all teachers to do this first course on e-module, then you have suicide, and you have your selection, would that be possible, and does that make sense to folks? Because it then allows that selection outside of just following the e-modules. And I don't even know if there would be like a website on the Department of Ed for this, because it's pretty specific to help school districts. Whoever's going to be in charge of making sure all this is done, what are the things, and just outlining that.
I was looking for the language here. We surely aren't. We're trying to set up resources for easy access to these trainings, but not trying to make this an exclusive, inclusive list. Recognize that there are other trainings out there that are as good, or especially people in the field, and that may be taking even more. Our goal at the department will be to recognize those and set up a process for approving those. Again, if it's done in regards to the certification, we can kind of extend and modify what we're already doing. If it's done to monitor people on every 2 years or 4 years, 100% what the districts are doing, that's a little bit more problematic. It adds a lot more legwork to districts to report in and us to compile all that. But I think it surely can be done in regards to the trainings that are recommended here, as well as an opportunity to approve other trainings that people may come in with. We don't want to be the hurdle that keeps people from, we want to be the facilitator, if you will.
Right.
So. Are there any last thoughts about training for school staff? We're about at the end of our time period for this morning.
Well, can we, for action purposes, one, is this what we feel like we're putting our stamp of approval on for the suicide? You know, this is what Kate's recommending. Mm-hmm. She is our task force expert in this, as well as state.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do that, then what does that mean? Like, we put this to the side, this has been listed. What's that process going to look like? We thought about that?
I don't know if a collective, if we thought about that, but yes, our idea, Kate and mine idea coming out of our meeting, was that this list for staff suicide awareness and prevention trainings would, after discussion this morning, be the list of recommended trainings in this area.
And then we could take this list and replace the list that we currently have on our website within short order. And then within the next few months, by the time that it needs to be, we could revise the language that talks about House Bill, Senate Bill 37 and change it to House Bill 44.
Mm-hmm.
And update the three-year e-learning modules with that component only.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a semantic question? Would this be a recommended list or a recognized list? Because it's
always been a recommended list.
Okay.
Can you, before you go further, what do you mean by recognized versus recommended?
We recognize these as quality programs that meet the needs, you know, for professional training, and as well as recommended, which seems to say that we recommend these over. I mean, is there the implication that we recommend these rather than? And it goes back to my thought of this is not designed to be the exhaustive list. I really don't have heartburn over either one, but I want to clarify if there is an intentionality around using the word recommended, where someone would say, well, I want to use this, but it's not recommended. That means this is not recommended, which isn't necessarily the case.
Cabinet Chairman?
Yes, ma'am. Senator McKinnon?
Thank you. I believe that the legislation requires the task force to recommend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
So I guess I was
and the law
recommending. Yes, recommending to the department.
Yes.
Okay, got that.
And
okay.
The law is approved by the commissioner.
Sure.
So I'll
back up my statement then. I'll retract that statement.
Okay.
Because you're recommending this
yes.
to the department. Yes. Thank you, Senator McKinnon. That is, I'm thinking that we're recommending this to.
We're recommending it to you, sir.
Correct. then it's been recommended that is the absolute correct word, and I don't want to change that. I was simply thinking that now as it's listed on our website, are we recommending it to others? That's
gotcha.
I was different.
Gotcha.
So,
well, and I want to come back to that, but I think we need
ahead.
To do this.
Only my confusion.
Barbara?
And my question is, okay, we're these would be recommended, mm-hmm. and would districts have an option to use something else that meets the standards, and how would we know that it meets the requirements of the law?
What districts have done in the past is if they want to have their community behavioral health provider come in and provide a training that's kind of a little bit of gatekeeper, maybe a little bit of the Jason Foundation, which was one that we promoted initially. They usually contact me. If there's something on this list that they want to use that's not on this list, they typically will contact me, and I ask them to send me their training material so I can review it to make sure they're touching it and hitting the bases that they need to be hitting. And that's what's happened in the past.
Okay. So
is that documented, though? Because so if we remember from last meeting, we were doing recommended evidence-based. Then we started talking about the ones that are maybe evidence-based but aren't on that recommended list of potentially creating a requirement, we'll call it the rubrics. Kind of what is the criteria that's used that you talked about, mm-hmm. and actually having that documented, because I don't know if it's currently documented or if it's just in your head. And then also, what is the process if it's a homegrown or not evidence-based but best practices? What is the criteria to be able to select from that? I think that's what you were getting to. Part of us is to talk about, are we also still going to create that and or look to our content expert of going, what is that criteria, and making sure that's also listed in our recommendations. But I also see that's what gets put into the guide or the toolkit. So I'm looking at the task members. Is that something that you want?
Charity?
Just to clarify, you are thinking of including this recommended list as well as others that are being used, but not recommending?
Won't add them. So, as Sharon, correct? So if someone comes and looks at this list and says, nice, but we actually want John here, the counselor, who has 30 years of experience, to come in and train our staff. Okay, what does he need to train on? What is the criteria that need to be covered and making sure that's done? So that they either pick from this list, pick other evidence, and making sure that it meets that criteria, and or if it's, I use the word homegrown, what needs to be in that. So if Sharon's not available or is no longer here, making sure it's documented, and it just empowers the school districts.
That's something that could easily be put together. Okay. Kate and I could easily do that if we wanted that piece.
And again, I'm supportive of having that. If there are other things out there that meet the requirements and the standards, and then yes, I think we should.
And again, over the last 3 years since we've been doing it, there's maybe been one. The Bering, Bristol Bay, and Lake and Penn usually have their local provider come in and do it, but they're using mostly the gatekeeper model and bringing in some local stuff, and so. Which gatekeepers on the list. And so none of them that I've seen are the homegrown version.
Right.
Most of them are pulling pieces from different components of different trainings that are on our list. But we can come up with that criteria list really easily.
To me, that's homegrown.
Yeah.
When you start creating your own recipe. Charity, did you have a different question?
So I know I missed the last meeting. I was volunteering in Nicaragua.
Oh.
So this is what all of these trainings are currently being used in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And then did we consider national other trainings possibly that could work in the
We've
state?
Had some other ones. We have a larger list than this.
Mm-hmm.
And Kate Burkhart took that list and kind of narrowed it down to what's been used, but we do have probably 5, 6, 7 other trainings that were on our first.
Okay.
Our first set of trainings, but nobody's using those, even though they've been up for about 3 years.
Okay.
So at the last meeting, Kate and I were tasked with looking at trainings and coming back to the task force with what our recommendations are. So this is a winnowed down list. It's not the only thing Kate reviewed.
Okay.
Are there other questions?
So
I don't know that we have a formal vote taking, or are we just going to go by agreement?
Well, an agreement or make a vote, because we have everybody's a voting member except for our commissioner and representatives, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think the commissioner
votes.
I think our legislative representatives.
Just Nathan.
Don't.
Sorry, commissioner. That's what you get for a 30-second strip down. Okay, so commissioner, so we're only missing Kate, so we definitely have a form. So I would say we just do a voting so it's documented and
sure. Nobody
feels out. So since you've been chairing for this piece, I will make the motion to, I'm trying to think of words.
Recommend.
I motion that this list is the recommended staff training for staff.
For suicide awareness
for
and
suicide
prevention.
Awareness, thank you.
And prevention.
And prevention.
I will second that motion.
Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes. And we are at our time for a break, Trevor.
I know. I just keep going because we were a little late.
Mm-hmm.
Can we now go down that path and get from Sharon and from Kate what is that criteria list? So if they don't do this, that next level, and be able to present that in the January's meeting?
Yes. Sounds good.
Absolutely.
Right. We'll make sure that's on the agenda.
Okay.
That's all I had.
Okay. Let's come back at 11:15.
Ivana, can you mute it so that we don't drive people crazy?
It's right here.
All right. Well, we'll get started. The commissioner is still out, but he'll join us. So we have a guest presentation. We have Norm Wooten. Am I saying that correct?
Yes.
Wooten. And he is the director at the Association of School Boards. We provided him generally 3 questions, or actually Patty did. Just to let folks know, the 3 questions we wanted him to go through were, what do school districts need to implement identified curriculum? Second was, what barriers can you identify? And overall recommendations or suggestions. And, of course, there'll be plenty of time for questions. So, again, thank you, Norm, for being here, and we'll let you take it away.
Sure. Thank you for allowing me to come and speak with you today. But most particularly, thank you for the work that you're doing. We in school districts appreciate that. Last year, before the session started, my membership came together, and they said, we are going to oppose any unfunded mandates that come before the legislature. And that seemed like a pretty simple statement. Well, unfortunately, the first thing that came up was Aaron's Law. And so I went back to my membership, and I said, is that really what we want to do? And my membership's response was, these sexual abuse, assault, predator crimes that are occurring, they're approaching epidemic in many parts of our state. And so certainly we as school board members, concerned about the education, but not only the education, but the welfare and the health and of children in similar, we can't be seen as opposing something like that. So we bit the bullet, if you would, and we didn't oppose those those pieces of legislation to come about. Let me tell you what school districts have a statutory both a statutory responsibility and authority to approve curriculum that's introduced and taught in their school districts. We are obviously a local control state, very heavily local control, and so school boards have the responsibility to approve that curriculum, what's taught to students in their schools. We've been working very hard. School districts have been working very hard over the last two or three years to integrate and align their curriculum to meet the new Alaska content standards that were implemented in the state. And it has been put a lot of stress, if you would, on local school districts. Larger school districts, medium-sized school districts have done this in-house for the most part, using their own staff to create this curriculum. Others, and those that have done it in-house, have been free to share their curriculum with other school districts, and so school districts have adopted it, and then some have contracted, you know, to have that curriculum done. So they're somewhat tired of working on curriculum, and of course they have a statutory responsibility to periodically review that on a rotating basis, all of their curricular material for every content area. And so so what do school districts need to implement this identified curriculum? Well, when we were talking about Aaron's Law mainly, and then at the end, toward the end of the session, Bree's Law came in on this. There were several organizations in the state that this was so important to them that came forward and said, we're willing to help, you know, create some sort of a model curriculum that districts could adapt. Rasmussen Foundation for one, and I'm sure there were others that did this. There was a collective sigh of relief from school districts and that there was going to be some help to do this. While school districts have the responsibility to identify and approve curriculum within their districts, certainly any help that our folks can get in all of our school districts would be greatly appreciated. If there were a model curriculum that could be adapted to local needs, we were that. But what we heard from our members is it has to be culturally relevant curriculum. It has to meet the needs of every indigenous culture in our state. It has to make sense, okay? And so that probably is the greatest need. Now, in this, when you develop this model curriculum, what we would like, what our districts need, is not just an outline of what to teach. Okay, what we would like is for resources to be identified in there that districts could use, because curriculum is more than a book. It's more than an outline, you know, of what to teach kids. Teachers need how to teach it, what to teach, what's important, what's culturally relevant, all of these types of things in both written and digital form. And if it was in digital form, that would be great, because that's easy to adapt to local needs. And so that's the I think that's the greatest need: a curriculum that can be used, that's not one that'll sit on the shelf and gather dust, and that has appropriate resources in it that will enable teachers to teach it, and it means something to students, grab their interest, you know, address the needs, be relevant. Be understandable to kids, and obviously I don't have to tell you this, but to be age and grade appropriate, you know, so that it can be delivered to students no matter what their age, to have an appropriate curriculum to their age. What barriers can you identify? And I prefer to use the word challenges. Barrier has an implication to me of something that you can't leap over. Where a challenge is something that you look at, you meet, and you try to figure a way that you can do it. Well, time is the greatest challenge that we face in school districts. Time for teachers, you know, they're already teaching, they have a full-time job already, And if you add one more thing, that's just one more thing that we have to cram in or stuff in. Having said that, we understand how critical this is. We understand the need. And let me tell you, the perpetration of a sexual crime against a child is not only an immoral, morally wrong, it affects every part of that kid's life. And I don't have to tell you this. It affects every other academic area that we're attempting to teach, as well as their life for the rest of their life. They have this trauma that they never ever get over. Personally, just anecdotally, personally, one of my adopted daughters was sexually abused by a relative of hers, and I want to tell you, to this day, she's still suffering as an adult. You know, as an adult of 30-something years old, she's still suffering the effects of that, you know. And there's not a day goes by that it doesn't affect her in some way. And so that's how concerned we are about that. We see the effects of it in our buildings every day. So it's time for kids. They've got to learn everything on the Alaska Content Standards to graduate from our high schools, meet all of the academic criteria, get the required number of credits and the appropriate content subjects, and so it's time for our students. It's one more thing that they've got to learn. Having said that, we will make do and figure out some way to deliver this. It's so important. Counselors, big issue in our school districts. Counselors is one thing that has gone in many districts. At best, particularly in rural Alaska, they have an itinerant or a traveling counselor, if they're lucky, that's able to get around. And they're depending more and more upon the health corporations and tribal organizations that can help them to deliver those subjects. And those folks are stepping up. I don't want to minimize that in any way whatsoever. But counselors are generally only present in large mostly urban school districts, and there's not enough there even. So their caseload has gotten higher and higher. And they're not only counselors for students in need, they're also doing academic counseling as well. And so they're just really stressed out. And of course, obviously there's budget considerations. And that's not something that you're gonna solve here, but everything we do takes money. And I'm told by legislators that money's not everything, and I agree, money is not everything, but money sure helps, you know, and it's necessary that we have it. And I'm not being flip about this at all, but there's that. So overall recommendations, suggestions that you have, and I'll go back to what I said at the very beginning. If we have a model curriculum that will meet the needs of students, will address what we're trying to do, and it can't be what we want in school districts is a model curriculum that not only fulfills the requirements of the law, but that fulfills the spirit of the law. We want it to help our kids. Okay, we want it to make a difference in the lives of kids because it affects them for the rest of their life, and it affects our academic outcomes in our district when kids don't have the benefit of this training. We're doing a lot of work around this with the Alaska ICE, the Initiative for Community Engagement. We're working with kids, you know, throughout the state. We just received a $3 million grant to continue this work in the state, and we have a lot of partners around the state that will be working with us on that, and we're pretty excited. Although the grant is specific to six districts, our position is that a rising tide raises all boats. And so whatever we do in one district will naturally spill over into other districts, and we'll be able to help kids all over the state. So we want that curriculum, that model curriculum, to mean something. We want it to be real. We want it to have relevance. We want it to have cultural relevance. And we want it to be something that can be used in any district And I guess that's my spiel to you, and that's my request. And thank you so much for the work that you're doing on behalf of our kids. We thank you for that.
Thank you, Norm. Questions for Norm? We'll start here in the room, and then we'll go to the phone. No questions? Folks on the phone from the task force or the general community?
Trevor, Mr. Chairman, this is Senator McKinnon.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say thank you, Norm. I'm not sure that we can accomplish everything that you've asked for, but it certainly makes me want to try that much harder. Knowing and understanding what kids will connect to is going to be certainly a challenge for anyone to take on this curriculum development. But anyway, I wanted to personally say thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. I thank you for your interest in this and working on behalf of our kids. Thank you.
Anybody else on the phone? I have a couple questions. I always leave myself to last. A couple times you keep them on the same model curriculum. So you were here for our discussion, kind of outlining, we've got a list recommendation, and we're for the staff. The same process is going to be done for the students. So here's our recommendation list. We're trying to not just have one, because there are different needs and desires from a school district, as well as then if none of those meet, how do you pick and what's that criteria? So it's not one model curriculum. And I'm not sure if that's what you were suggesting, but when you hear that kind of design, does that meet the needs of the school, do you think, or are we being too broad or maybe too narrow?
I think your model of using a self-paced teacher training process, and you're using e-learning, you know, for teachers to do that, is the best way possible right now. Technology has come to the point where those courses mean something. I was an adjunct professor for the University of Alaska many, many years ago, teaching some engineering courses in a previous life that I had. And boy, we thought we were cutting edge, because I was teaching a course over the telephone. And that was just so cool, you know, and we bragged about it to other states. Well, obviously, we're far beyond that now. And so the ability, the capability that we have is just incredible in this state. I go into districts all over the state, and there's these VTC monitors up there and hardware, you know, that's available to do that. And so by a model curriculum, I don't think you have to write four or five curriculum models. Okay, I think that you can put together a broad-based curriculum model that says, for this particular subject or this particular topic, these resources are available to you to teach that. And much like you were given, you know, on the suicide prevention intervention type of thing. So if we had a selection, a recommended set of selection of materials, I think that's a good way to go.
Thank you. My second question is related to time. I hear what you're saying. Time within the school is finite, both for the teacher and for the student. And I really appreciate we're going to do this.
Yes.
But I also recognize it's still finite. So in a perfect world, how do we make sure that the time, the right balance? What would you hope to see if you got the magic wand?
Well, I'm going to defer to teachers. I'm not an educator. I'm not a teacher, and so we're depending on our teachers to come up with the time. I don't have an answer for you.
Okay.
It's the day is this long.
I know.
We've got this much stuff to put into it. And I honestly don't have an answer for you. It's just a concern that I bring up.
And then what's my final question, just knowledge of the school boards and stuff. one of the groups that we sometimes forget about is the parent side.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on making sure that the parents are engaged? Because I truly believe it's not the school's sole responsibility to educate our kids. It truly does take a village, and the primary caregivers are the parents or the guardians. What would you suggest to us making sure that they're included in maybe getting some of this information as well?
Well, what we encourage school districts to do is they adopt curriculum is to always have parental representation on those curriculum adoption committees. I mean, that's critical. In schools that I know engage their advisory school boards in the villages. They have PTA representative, any kind of parent organization, and so forth. And school boards have public readings. They have public hearings on curriculum before they adopt that curriculum. So it's always our recommendation to involve parents in any way whatsoever. That teachings and trainings on a subject such as this is very, very sensitive. And there was debate during the passage of this legislation about opt-out, opt-in provisions and so forth and what we were going to do. And I can tell you, if a family or a child has some sort of a sexual predation going on and it's real easy for them to opt out, I have an issue on that, and I don't know what the solution is, but you understand what I'm saying.
Oh, we do.
And that's abhorrent to me. I don't get it, but nevertheless, it occurs out there.
Well, and that's, I think, why we're training the staff as well, to be able to recognize the signs.
Sure.
That can be a sign of
absolutely.
Why the child not in this, why the parents holding.
And we have a pretty stringent law and a requirement for reporters, within our school system to do that. So that training is certainly essential and critical even.
Anything else? Norm, one final question. Do you recommend us talking to anybody else to ask those type of three questions that you think we should be hearing from, whether we're talking parents or a specific association? Who else do you think should be responding like you?
Reaching out to the state PTA, I think that would be an appropriate thing to do, because they do represent parents, and those are interested, for the most part, parents, So I think that would probably bring in at least a representative of that in.
Know any model school districts like, hey, talk to this superintendent even before this law, they really get this concept and they would be great to be sharing how things have been working?
Yeah, I can think of about 8 or 10 superintendents, and I will forward those names to the commissioner. Will that be okay?
Yeah, and or Patty.
Yeah, great. I'll get them to you.
That would be great.
And those are just recommendations. There's many more, but I know there are superintendents who are very concerned about this as well. And are doing a pretty decent job already of these types of things.
Well, our goal is not to work in a bubble, and to get that kind of feedback would be very helpful.
Yeah, I'll get that to you today, in
Thank
fact.
You.
Thank you. All right, well, enjoy your Monday and happy holidays.
Thank you.
Here. Appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks for your work.
Thank you.
Well, we're at 11:40. Our agenda is 11:45. We get lunch, so for once we actually get an extra 5 minutes, so there should be no reason whatsoever that we can't start promptly at 1 o'clock. So for those on the phone, we will say good morning, and we will see you in an hour and 20. Thank you. welcome back, everyone. Who's on the phone?
Samantha in Senator Gardner's office.
Hi, Samantha.
Hi, Trevor.
I think Melanie Palmy won't be able to join us because she was getting an award today. Just dawned on me. I should have congratulated her this morning. Amanda, are you back on? Senator McKinnon. She texted me letting me know that she was cut off at some point because her cell phone overheated, which isn't because it was being used. It's because it's sitting out in the sun in Hawaii.
Oh, that
must be
tough.
I know exactly. She didn't tell me that, but I know she's in Hawaii. So, Representative Tarr. They may be joining us.
And Kate Burkhart just texted that she just landed, so she'll call in as soon as she can.
Oh, great. Landed in Juneau or?
Anchorage. She was going to be here this week for this meeting. And the last night she said she got directed elsewhere.
Okay, no worries. So, looking at our agenda, we have initial recommendations for curricula for students. And I have Commissioner Henley is taking the lead on this. Is that not correct, Lori?
I think.
Or
oh,
you,
I am?
You take the lead and then direct Commissioner Henley?
I think Lori is.
I think I am. Okay.
Well, when you send me revisions to the agenda,
yeah,
I'm passing it on.
Are you talking about curriculum considerations then at 2:45?
Oh.
Well, maybe that's the commissioner.
Maybe that's the commissioner. Okay.
Okay, so you I misunderstood.
Okay.
No worries.
So at the you have in front of you
no,
and I'll
they don't.
Oh, they don't.
You have them all in front of you.
You have them all.
Oh.
These are the
lines. Okay.
Right there.
Yeah,
they're all
that,
in front
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I have them all in front of me. Okay.
I think I have it too already. Okay. Before we jump into this, Patty, just out of clarification, so when we have any of the past members on the phone and so forth, with some of this stuff, we don't always get to email it. Or what way can we ensure that everybody has it? And potentially there are some key public folks that are continually on the phone that I think would be great to have this,
mm-hmm.
hearing from their comment. Are we able to set up some type of doc share or?
We have
how,
live binders that's a document sharing thing with a link. And then it can be posted on your website after the fact, and it could get out sooner if it was prepared sooner.
Right.
But this
and
just
sometimes
went out
they
Friday
have it,
night.
Yeah, and I knew that. I'm just trying to think ahead to also maybe make things a bit easier for you. Does LiveBinder have a spot where, so meeting, what is today, the 14th of December, and everything that we want related to that meeting can just go under that header? So if there's something last minute added, you can just add, and then people can be directed to that binder if they're not here?
Oh, that's a good idea. It's not organized that way right now. It's in a little bit different order, but it could be organized that way.
Just wondering if we could have a section on meetings to look at. And do some of our key members like Melanie, Representative Tarr has been actively involved, do they have access to the live binder?
Not at this point.
Do task members have a concern if non-task members like those individuals had access? I'm looking for your guys' feedback.
I don't think so.
I can't think of a it seems
so.
Like it's meeting material.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The meeting is public. The materials are
public.
Okay.
We've got people that are interested and invested, so.
Yeah.
So is there anybody else that we think, Melanie, and then we have Representative Tarr, is there anybody else that comes to mind right now? Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's do an invite to them, Patty.
Okay.
And then we can maybe work for the January meeting, see if we can do that. And then rather than even sending out all the paperwork, we can just do the agenda with a link to, and people can go there. They wish to print it out or be attached via the web, however they want to do it.
Okay.
sorry to interrupt.
No, good.
The commissioner, while you're here, maybe also we could get a link from our web page to the Children's Trust for the Alaska Safe Children's Act.
Mm-hmm. And anything you want on there, you know, you just send it to Nick and he'll take care of it for you. All right.
We could probably put that on our website too, to link to yours. So.
Trevor, this is Samantha in Senator Garner's office.
Yes.
I just wanted to be clear, what handout are we looking at right now?
So, Samantha, this is Laurie. It's called Alaska Safe Children's Act Task Force at a Glance, Classroom Curriculum, Working Draft, December 14, 2015. And it's a chart of different curricula. And the first one on the first page is the Great Body Shop.
Okay, perfect. I have that. Thank you very much.
Sure. And I'm just writing a note to myself to do the link, and then I will start. So Kate and I also reviewed, along with staff and my staff, who are sort of the experts in the working in the state right now, on curricula that sort of runs a gamut. So the Great Body Shop, for example, is the first one, and it's a comprehensive curricula that envelops maybe a list of things. You'll notice in the types and topics: sexual abuse, personal safety, bullying, substance abuse, healthy relationships, that it's for K through sixth grade. It's on the evidence-based list. And then we also had a column for cost, so you can sort of see what we're looking at as we move through. So we started it with ones that were more comprehensive, and as we went down the list, maybe they are not quite the scope of the Great Body Shop, but are still evidence-based and focused on different parts of the topics that we want to have covered. So we thought it would be helpful to have a list sort of in this format where you could see the name, you could go and actually look at it on their websites, but you could at a glance tell what topics they covered, sort of get a general description, the grade levels, whether or not it was evidence-based, and the cost. So I thought we could spend some time this afternoon just sort of going through the list. It could be that we don't want to recommend all of these. It may be that two or three, five rise to the top for us as a group, in which case then we would ask staff to actually do some more work on these. Like, let's order a set of the materials and read through it to ensure that it really is something we would want to be recommending to the department for them to recommend to schools. So we thought this would give the basic information for people to think about. Patty can help me talk a little bit about some of them, and we could sort of go forward. So that's the conversation I was thinking about having. Barbara?
This is Barbara. I have the ones that are listed in this handout been reviewed against the criteria that we had?
Not officially. This is Patty. We're kind of waiting for that official rubric because it needed some work on how those criteria are going to come together. But they have been reviewed by staff in an informal way with our professional expertise.
Okay, thank you. So one of the things maybe to mention is Laurie shared, and maybe you were going to mention it, we're going to gravitate from saying rubric to criteria. Rubric if I'm remembering correctly, the school districts used to rank curriculum, and because we're not actually ranking, we're making recommendation, and recommendation are based off of criteria, we're going to use that word to minimize any confusion from people of when we're talking about that rubrics, and I think that was part of what we were dealing with last meeting around that topic, just to let folks know.
And Lori, also just to clarify that this is a whole list with three different, to cover the three different topic areas that are in the purpose of the task force, so the one being the sexual abuse and assault prevention, the other being the dating violence awareness and prevention, and the last one being alcohol and drug abuse prevention education, two of which are required in schools and one is not, which is the alcohol and drug abuse. So it kind of follows that order also.
What do you mean the alcohol one isn't? So you mean currently required, but this law now requires it, or?
Currently, we don't require any particular course in health education other than a requirement for graduation, but not topic-specific. So Aaron's Law and Bree's Law is the first time where schools have actually been or are going to be required to cover certain topic areas in health education. Right now, the health education with alcohol and drug abuse prevention is in statute as encouraged.
And remind me, so with our five areas, teachers get trained in, but for students, it's only those three, so the other two are not?
For students, it's only going to be sexual abuse and prevention, dating, and dating violence prevention.
And alcohol.
And alcohol is encouraged, but the task force is tasked to still recommend curriculum.
Okay.
Yeah.
Even though it's not required, we're tasked with recommending.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Because so, they're encouraged to do it.
Right. Making sure that I understood, because that's I was going down a different path. Thank you.
It's confusing.
It is.
Well, that would be law. Okay.
So on your agenda, you see those three areas that Patty just mentioned, and whether it's K through 12 or 7 through 12. So you'll notice the dating violence is 7 through 12, not K through 12. One of the things that I like about the Child Protection Unit's second step is that it has resources for each group of folks that we're trying to touch. So for the staff, for the students, and for families. It's fairly, comprehensive, if I can use that word, in and of itself. And this year, we have purchased it for each of our funded programs who go into schools to provide information to be able to use this particular curricula as a starting for the pre-K through 5. But I think we're just doing K through 5.
Probably.
Yeah, right now. I think another helpful thing about it is that the cost, while it looks pretty spendy up front, includes technical assistance for the life of the time you're using the material. So it's not just the first 60 days and a new teacher comes in and too bad, so sad, right? You can still get that technical assistance available. It's something that also has to do and support social emotional learning, which I think overall is sort of the foundational materials in which we would want to encourage schools. We heard a lot last meeting from the Anchorage School District and their implementation of social emotional learning from K through 12. So I think while it doesn't fit K through 12. It does fit K through 5 and is a good, like, first foundational base for programs.
Lori, before you go on, I've used Second Step in elementary schools. This one, the Child Protection Unit, the companion program is Second Step.
Yep.
I understand that, but does that mean it's not feasible to stand? It's not a standalone?
It is a standalone.
So even if you don't have Second Step, it still makes sense?
Correct.
Okay.
It's just recommended that you use the two together. They complement each other.
Okay, that's good.
And we did learn that many schools in Alaska are using Second Step.
Perfect.
Which is the next one on top of the next page? The Second Step. So I think when we're looking at curricula, so be beneficial in our recommendations if we do find curricula that does progress, so that you're not introducing maybe a totally new idea or way of learning when you get to the eighth grade as opposed to the fourth grade. You can sort of progress along. That would sort of be the thinking with many of these.
I was commenting maybe just to clarify for myself. Because some of the curriculum needs to address K through 12, it's in all likely that it's likely that districts will need to select more than one program.
Yes.
Correct. Okay. I didn't really see one that like hits everybody.
Yeah.
So out of curiosity,
I don't think there is one that hits everybody.
In the sense of economics, so if we looked at the Child Protection Unit, $1,000 per bundle. So what would be the total cost statewide if everybody just went with that one program? What would that cost look like? And I'm asking that as a potential, like, funder and longevity and so forth. I realize school districts may have some money, but they may not. So starting to try to figure out that money side.
I'm picturing the a bundle as a school.
No.
So it talks about per bundle, which is pre-K through grade 5.
So it means you get one bundle of each of the grade levels. But it's still you would need...
Is that per classroom then? No, it can't be per classroom. It's
what's a bundle?
Per grade?
A bundle is you get pre-K, K, 1,
right.
2, 3, 4, 5. So if that's all the classes you have, if you only have one class of each grade,
okay,
you've got it covered. But if you have more, you're going to need more. So a small school, yes. But then the challenge for multi-grade schools is there, too. If they have, you know, just a few students in each grade, what grade level are they going to hit?
Would it create a problem, and I don't know how the math, and if it's too complicated, a projection cost with the concept that if every school district used this, what that cost would be? Or is that a mathematical nightmare? And again, projection is just that, approximate, give or take a couple tens of thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to start also helping us understand, because we're like, oh, like we're liking this. Well, that's $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be able to look and go, I'm going to have a hard time fundraising for that versus something that's $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Please, Patty.
This is Patty. Last year, Deputy Commissioner Morris and I tried to come up with some numbers, too, and I think we still have that. And we did all these calculations with everything we knew, and we came up with a ballpark that I could get. But that's not per curriculum. It was kind of averaging the average cost overall, the number of students in Alaska, et cetera.
Well, let's start with that, maybe. Let's add that to the agenda or maybe even just share that.
Okay.
I think it's helpful for us to be thinking that.
Right. I mean, it's not that hard to do. I mean, we could surely work through it. I mean, picture 300 schools that have K-5.
Yeah.
And then some of those would have multiple, you know, three in each grade level. So
mm-hmm.
anyway, you could figure out
mm-hmm.
500 bundles.
Right. Well,
right.
Do we as a
we
task force think that will be helpful?
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that because I'm a funder,
mm-hmm.
but I want to make sure that's useful to you all as well.
I think that would be helpful to me because I'm still not sure, like when it looks, you see a bundle, but if it covers all the K through 5 classrooms,
because
mm-hmm. you can make copies or whatever,
mm-hmm.
in the whole district, then, you know, it would be the same amount for every district almost. So
mm-hmm.
That would be really nice to know if we're looking at, if that's what it means
mm-hmm.
or if that's not what it means.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. So I think the individual cost would be maybe more helpful for the school districts as they're looking, but the overall cost would be helpful for us to get a good sense of what we're going to try to fundraise. If we're
yeah.
going to try to fundraise.
That and or
mm-hmm.
where do we find those dollars?
Right.
What does that mean?
And Trevor?
Hi, Representative Tarp.
Is it? Could I ask a quick question?
I'm always comfortable with that.
Thank you so much. I just wonder, you know, while they're researching that, this piece of it about, you know, what is exactly involved in a bundle and what limitations on sort of sharing that information, if you could also find out if districts could share information as a cost savings measure so that, you know, if one district was going to deal with something in October, you know, could they share resources with, you know, a nearby district, say Prince of Wales Island, where there's four districts even, you know, can some of those materials be shared? Is that impractical if it's not limited by, like, the purchasing license or something like that? I just wonder if there are opportunities to kind of be in innovative like that and almost have like a, you know, like a lending library. I know we do that with the university library and the public library where they send things around the state, but I don't know if that's a practical thing for districts to do or not.
It's a good question. I don't know how.
Some depends on consumables, like Great Body Shop has consumables. So that wouldn't work, but you're right. It's a good idea. It's not necessarily easy.
What's consumable?
So when you look at this, it's $45 per teacher and $7 per student. Students get a monthly newsletter kind
okay.
of thing, and it's got the activities in it that the teacher walks them
okay.
through, and it's a take-home.
Take-home.
So it's things that they write in and they...
It's not something they eat.
I have to say, Trevor, though, that it, depending on the differences between all of these different programs or curricula, there may be an organization here that would look at the state as a whole,
mm-hmm.
and possibly if the entire state were to use the same thing,
mm-hmm.
there might be a cost savings if we could agree to that and everybody is on board with that to have a, I don't want to say a license because
mm-hmm.
it may not be a license, but a statewide license.
Mm-hmm.
That would cover all the so that's not a bad thing to look for.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these may have that kind of option.
Mm-hmm.
And it is one thing we're looking at as far as efficiency is cooperative purchasing agreements,
mm-hmm.
not just in this kind of thing, but theoretically, you know, we could work with a company. I think it's a great idea. That's one thing that the department can help coordinate.
Mm-hmm.
What if we had 20 districts that want a Great Body Shop?
Right.
Patty, please.
Well, that's what I was going to say, too, is that many of these are heavily copyrighted, so sharing of materials school to school would not be within a license, but the cost sharing of the license,
right.
such as the commissioner just said, would make economical sense. And Alaska, you know, with some of these commercial vendors, you know, Alaska's... about the size of maybe one big district somewhere else. So
mm-hmm.
can't we just be one district? So what I'm hearing is almost like a recommendation that we want somehow added into our report to the department of where possible cost sharing, because I'm thinking you guys would either have or you would be developing a system where – I don't know, it's like a menu like we just had over here at the restaurant, and you write how many of things that you want, find out which school, and see where you could bundle and save those dollars. So, Patty, how are we, so as we go through this process, we've had different thoughts of recommendations and so forth. I don't want these lost, and I know you're doing minutes. How can we start flagging that stuff, and is there a way to start creating a bullet point so we almost get a very rough draft of our recommendations and they're outlined? Is that possible, and how would you, maybe even for the back, who's writing this report? Is that you? Like, am I sitting down with Lori and writing this?
Well, I wouldn't think so. We're providing the support staff, but we could help. And
I never really thought about it until about now.
Right.
Thinking, am I writing this?
I'm happy to work.
Can I keep up my chair? You didn't share that with me.
I was surprised you took it so easily.
Yeah, now we know. Now, ta-da. Great. Okay, so, all right. I think having a way of tracking that stuff, I'll take it. But just making sure, because as we talk, we come up with thoughts of, let's make sure we have that in the report. So we just need to.
I think we can do that, have a little minute tick list.
Yeah, a section within the minutes that we can start cutting and pasting and bring that stuff over and then create the report. And then I think at some point we need to talk about how that report's going to be written. Sooner than later, and be thinking about how we're going to do that. So that's probably a Trevor Lori discussion, and bring you in on it, Patty, and we'll go from there.
With things like that, I would just suggest that the recommendation come not only for the curriculum, but also for pursuing methods of efficiencies. I just want to keep that broad enough, because if it starts getting down into cost, what I suggested as an idea, cooperative purchasing, we're not well equipped to organize that. We can work with SHRC or a resource agency. But anyway, I just hate to get that so narrow that we look at that. I don't have anybody to.
Right.
I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to purchase it from the state and pass it out.
Right.
And,
yeah.
So, but anyway, it doesn't mean it shouldn't be done. Mm-hmm. So just let's keep a.
Well, in the end, when we have the concept, it's just that. It's not,
right.
And
it's
as we
one.
Start putting these together, that's where we look to you, Commissioner, and go, fabulous idea, but we don't have the system, and or this would be blah, blah, blah. We're turning to you for that expertise.
Yeah.
I just would hate to lose the, because it seems like, that idea works.
Yeah.
Let's hold it, and then we can process it.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I think that's good.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Mm-mm. As you're talking, I'm thinking.
Well, that's a good thing.
It is.
Thinking that's good. Then share those thoughts. And then Speak Up, Be Safe is one, if I'm remembering correctly, Patty, we kept on the list because while we also want to have a broad list for people from which to choose that is comprehensive, maybe several weeks in a row. There's also a recognition that not all schools have the resources to be able to do that. And this particular one is only two lessons per grade. And it is one that goes all the way through 12th grade. Is that correct, Patty?
It used to be elementary only, but just recently they've overhauled everything pre-K through 12. With two lessons per grade. It's pretty straightforward.
Question. In looking at Speak Up, Be Safe, simply because it is pre-K through 12, like, wow, this would be cool if it worked for everybody. But I'm looking through the description, and maybe it's there and I'm not reading it right, but I don't see dating violence.
Right. I don't think it it hasn't been reviewed to that level, but when I spoke with them, I don't think it would cover it. I think you'd have to supplement it.
Okay. So I just want to be clear, even if we found one that did the whole nine yards, they're not doing the whole nine yards.
Right.
Right.
And there'd still need to be something added. Okay.
Yep. There
so
would be.
Those recommendations come forward. I don't know if there's a column or This addresses these components.
Mm-hmm.
You're missing this. I mean, just so people aren't thinking they're getting a comprehensive curriculum,
mm-hmm.
they use any one of these.
Could we, within this matrix, maybe versus types and topics,
mm-hmm.
have a grid that shows child sexual abuse, teen violence, what are those things that are needed,
mm-hmm.
and then you put an X in each one,
mm-hmm.
and if no X, it means it's missing.
Yep.
Could we create
That's
that?
That's a good way to do that, yeah.
That would help me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to miss something.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
it would help me because I don't know the programs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Because you can read that that's what it covers, but then
mm-hmm.
you don't necessarily remember that that's part of the of the topic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that would be good.
And when I see the thing that says evidence errands list, is that it's evidence based? And or on Aaron's list, or evidence based on Aaron's list?
No, it's evidence based for Aaron's list. So it's more a comment. Aaron Marin made recommendations on her own website of programs that she approved, and so we've taken a look at those.
Do we know, are all those evidence based, or some best practices, and would we know?
Well, I believe we only have one. Is that correct? That's on Aaron's list, that's on ours, which is the Child Protection Unit.
And that's evidence-based, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
No, the Child Protection Unit is not on a registry by itself. Second step is on a registry.
The next one is on CASEL one.
So the Child Protection Unit is not, quote-unquote, evidence-based?
Correct, but it would be best practice. I think when you get real narrow focus, such as this topic area, it may not appear.
Okay.
So we may want to do something with the header of this column, too.
Yeah, I'm just wondering.
Mm-hmm.
This might even tie into that criteria conversation we want to have.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So Green Dot has curricula for middle school and for high school. So it would be something that people could, students could transition from 6th all the way through 12th grade. One of the things that I appreciate about Green Dot being in school is that it also is in communities, so it has the ability to add a dimension that maybe not others of these curricula will have. Homer, for example, was one of our pilot Green Dot communities. They've continued to be a Green Dot community. So they were doing bystander intervention, Green Dot, outside of school, and now this year they're putting it in their middle school. So it's just, I think, has the potential to really reinforce that community, changing the community norm to being able to interact and to look at what to do in different situations. This is and definitely something that I would think we would want to look more into. Laughing at the scraping going on.
Well, I'm just wondering if you're grabbing the snow or the pavement. Sorry.
That's okay. I think that it's also been one of the few dating violence curriculum, maybe the only one, that the CDC has reviewed and evaluated and shown evidence-based, it's shown that it's working.
Sexual violence.
So I think that would be helpful. Anyway, I think it is worth looking into.
And that's Green Dot?
Green Dot.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
It has been shown to have an impact on sexual violence. Okay,
mm-hmm.
good. I'm just looking at the cost there, but I only see the training, the teacher part. I don't see the student cost. Or
Is there?
Don't think there is, and this is more like a program rather than a classroom, you know, daily kind of education. So the facilitators get trained, and everybody's kind of trained. I don't want to misspeak.
So is it you get people be trained,
and
then there is...
It's a student leadership program.
Those peers, so those students then go into the classrooms and do presentations, talk, but they don't have materials, so you only pay to get those kids trained to be peer...
There are materials, so...
That comes with that price?
Mm-hmm.
Well, so, Patty, when it talks about 4 days of on-site training, is that for kids?
No. That's for the facilitators.
Facilitators, which are the adults, that's what I thought, okay. So that could be, I mean, when you look at cost, a district could get together and have all their 6th grade, 8th grade teachers.
Yeah, you could have
training.
50 people in the room to get the training.
Right.
So. Four days of training.
No, I don't know how that happens.
It is pretty intensive.
Amount of training for any district for their teachers.
But
it's a lot.
Sorry to speak out of turn.
Go
but
ahead.
You do or were thinking about getting master trainers in Alaska, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, which would reduce the cost. So right now we have 10 master trainers in Alaska. We're the only state that actually has certified trainers outside of the national program itself. So we would not have to have Dr. Edwards come in and do the training. We have people here in Alaska that are trained to do the training. And we pick up the travel cost to travel the person out to the community for the training. And so it would, I think this is like the Cadillac cost, not the... I don't know what an alternative cheaper car is cost.
It wasn't even the cost. I mean, I could see some pretty decent cost sharing. I mean, if you have enough people, it's the time. The 4 days is pretty intense.
4 days.
4 days is a lot.
But, you know, it would take a creative district to figure out how to, and sometimes they do things through the staff development network.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a week-long summer institute.
Mm-hmm.
People get credits for it.
Mm-hmm.
We could find a creative way to do it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't come, and I don't think schools are only
probably wouldn't come to the school during the school year.
We only have about 10 days of in-service.
Right.
So they would have to be giving teachers time out anyway.
Right, and it could be something that you look at where it's not 4 days straight in a row.
Right.
I mean, that probably wouldn't be optimal, but that doesn't mean it couldn't happen a different way. So, the fourth R is for 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. It has been reviewed in Alaska, the particular model that we've adapted for Alaska. It has been shown to be effective in Alaskan schools. It got recognized on both CASEL and, do you say that, NREP? Is that how you, NREP? And is currently 23 school districts. I'm lying.
We have people trained in that many districts.
Yes. So,
but the districts themselves may not be district-wide.
Mm-hmm. The fourth R, Healthy Relationships Plus, is after school and sort of would be a way to feed off of the 7th through 9th curriculum so that people could go on and still explore more about healthy relationships. Is there something that's sort of the newest?
It's kind of an option, or schools can use both and or either one now, because this is a little shorter program and a little more versatile with a couple of topics added that are particularly of interest in Alaska, being
mental health and suicide prevention.
And it appears that it's after school, so it would be voluntary in its current form. And could this, or has, do you know if this has been adapted to reach all students? Or is it just
this,
right now and after school?
It's not considered after school anymore. It's considered small groups.
Okay.
So it's suitable for after school programs, small groups. But it can be used in classroom for classes less than 25, or it can be used in school for small groups. Say the counselor wants to bring in a group of kids and just work with that one group of kids.
Okay. I did not clarify. I wasn't getting it. Thank you.
What's the difference between the two? One's a plus and one's not a plus. I'm not really getting the difference.
You're right. It's not a plus to this fourth R, healthy relationships. It's a plus to its former program, which did not have the mental health and suicide prevention in it.
That's the plus that got added in.
I forget what it was called before.
So the programs are the same, except for the plus just has two additional topics.
Correct, and less on human growth and development. But again, but not exactly the same, because the fourth R, the regular fourth R classroom-based, has one manual for 7th grade, one manual for 8th grade, one manual for 9th grade with about 21 lessons each, and is sequenced. The learning is sequenced. The Healthy Relationships Plus is for middle and high school age groups, but it's one manual.
Okay. And they can be standalone. They don't have to be together.
Correct.
Okay.
So I'm just curious, the fourth R, is it just different, are groups forming? Is it like a school group, or is it a teacher decides that they want to provide this? I was just curious, because you said it was for after school, or it used to be after school.
I was talking about the plus.
Oh, okay.
The fourth R itself is a health class curriculum, 21
lessons.
So it could be once a week or twice a week, but it's in the classroom.
Okay.
This is the one that I misspoke and said after school, when really it's small groups.
Okay.
And I have a question about the grant funding. If they're currently grant funded, is there continuing funding, or are those grants going to end? Could those grants take into account all districts on all students or not? I don't know what the funding source is.
This is Patty. We have been very fortunate to have 4 or 5 years of this funding from the federal government to the Department of Health and Social Services, and then they sent some over to us. The grant is ending, I think, next fall, and the new RFP, or next funding opportunity guidelines, have come out, and I think the grant application is due in April. And I don't think it's competitive, though. Non-competitive?
I think that's correct.
And it would be a 5-year grant again.
Okay.
But it may not be enough money to serve a great increase, although there's been a lot of thought into making it more sustainable, and there is now, there's online training options.
Mm-hmm. There is also the Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault doesn't yet have their new executive director on board, there's also initially training for teachers and community members that the network had funds for. So we'll be talking to them about what their expectations are for either looking for funding or continuing that. Because they're the ones that actually brought it into the state to begin with. And then, Patty, you were going to also about the positive action, which is also one that...
Do you want to mention fake
dates? Oh, I'm sorry. I just missed it. Did you want to...
Oh, well, this is a 10-lesson curriculum, and it is evidence-based. And I think CDC either started it or evaluated it. And we felt like this name always pops up if you're looking for evidence-based, as well as the fourth R.
Mm-hmm. And it's specific to dating violence, so it wouldn't have the breadth that some of the other ones have in other topics. But.
And it's $225 each, is that per classroom?
It's hard to know what
it
that
is
means,
hard to know.
Or how many kids
mm-hmm.
are covered, or if it's the whole school, grade 5.
There's a wide range of
costs.
I think
more specific.
Mm-hmm.
Like per teacher, per grade, or sometimes there are two grades put together. It gets confusing.
I think that'd be hugely helpful just to
mm-hmm.
clarify on each of these components so that if a version of this goes into our recommendation or in the list that's posted on our
mm-hmm.
site, that they get a quick, sometimes that'll be the first place they look, but
right.
they'll get a quick look and they can do the calculations for their school on what it'll cost them. But
with an asterisk of
mm-hmm.
prices can change at any moment.
Right.
yeah.
It doesn't change any of our ability to try to pursue cooperative, but it does
mm-hmm.
allow districts to determine whether it's in their realm of possibilities or not.
And I thank you for putting the information that
no,
you found already.
Yeah,
oh,
this
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
I just need more questions.
Yeah.
That's good. And that's what this list was meant to be. It's not inclusive or exhaustive. This is our first go-round at best efforts. And so this is good. Okay, now the positive action. Sorry.
Topic area, but this is when we get into the substance abuse prevention. And these actually, from this point on, Kate Burkhart, is Kate on? Maybe.
Kate,
I
am. I am.
You want to talk about these next?
Sure. So I am just now getting settled for the meeting, so I don't have everything in front of me just yet, but I can explain kind of the process for how those ended up on the list.
Okay.
So there are a lot of evidence-based curricula that show documentable outcomes when it comes to substance abuse, especially when you're looking at things that are tailored specifically to illicit drugs. Most of the models focus on either alcohol or all substances. And the documentation about their outcomes is not always available. And so what I did is I went through the National Registry of Evidence-Based Practices and Programs, and I didn't just take everything off the list because that doesn't help us. So I looked at all of the curricula, so not just prevention programs, because this isn't about programs, this is about curricula. So I looked at all of the curricula that had outcome-related to substance abuse, and then I looked at their evaluation data, the evaluation reports and any replications, And anybody whose evaluation data didn't score at least 3 out of 4, so SAMHSA and the Department of Health and Human Services have a scoring criteria for research around all of this work. And if the research is not rigorous, if it has too many flaws in the methodology, it's low scoring. So if the research didn't score at least 3 out of 4, it's not on the list. Also, I looked at where the curricula had been implemented, and if it had only been implemented in, like, let's say, an inner city community where half the student body was Hispanic and half the student body was African American, and no Indigenous students were included, and it had never been replicated in a rural area, it didn't seem like that was probably going to fit our bill. And so that didn't end up on the list. And that's why the list is pretty sparse, is because there weren't a lot of programs that focused on substance abuse that had really strong outcomes. And so what you see on the list are those that do. And so because I don't have the list in front of me, I'm still pulling it up. Patty, do you want to give me the first one, and I can talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, the first one is positive action.
Okay. So this one is focused on helping young people develop the critical thinking skills they need to make good decisions. And it's related to substance abuse because that's kind of the target. You don't want kids choosing to use alcohol and substance abuse. But it did show positive outcomes across other domains, because if you've got young people that have the skills to make good decisions in one area, typically that bleeds over into other areas. And that was one of the things I was looking for in these curricula, is those that might hit more than one topic area. Because, you know, we don't want school districts to have to implement 6 different curricula if they don't have to. The other thing, because we talked about this before the meeting, there's a lot of interest in marijuana-specific curricula or curricula that focuses on illicit drugs. And like I said, the options are minimal, but I just want to remind folks that when it comes to substance abuse, the data tells us that alcohol is still the drug of choice for both young people and adults in Alaska, and marijuana is coming in at a close second. We've done a lot of great work around decreasing use, alcohol use, and to be honest, I think a lot of that has to do with the more comprehensive approaches that our prevention programs use rather than targeted curricula about alcohol. There is a need to educate young people about marijuana, and we're still looking for a curricula that might help us with that. So the benefit to positive action, because I now have it in front of me, is that you can see that it has seen good outcomes across domains because it is popping up on more than one registry. And it is approved for school reform, which Patty can talk about much better than I can. It is kind of spendy, but it is something that a school district could implement for all grades. Do you want me to go to the next one?
Sure.
So reconnecting youth is a model that has been implemented in the Juneau school district at the alternative school. It's a semester long, although the alternative school in Juneau is making it last at least a year and maybe 2 years. It was designed to address suicide prevention first, but the outcomes are showing really strong outcomes related to either decreased drug use and involvement or abstinence from drugs and alcohol. One of the issues with this model is that it's expensive, and if you don't implement it with fidelity, you don't get good outcomes. And so this is not something you can just kind of do half-heartedly and expect something good to come out of it. And I think that that's one of the things our report or our menu should include is, I mean, we don't want to encourage people to not implement things with fidelity, but I think school districts should have that, like, in the back of their mind. If we do kind of a half-hearted job at this, are we going to achieve any results? So that's one caveat with Reconnecting Youth. Coping and support training, the CAST curriculum, is an offshoot of Reconnecting Youth. They go together. The project toward no drug abuse out of Southern California looks really promising. Like Positive Action, I mean, it was designed to address alcohol and drug abuse, but because it's focused on self-regulation, self-control, and critical thinking and communication, they showed positive outcomes across multiple life domains. And so that's one of the benefits to this curriculum is that when you help kids identify reasons to make good decisions about using drugs and alcohol, you tend to give them the same tools to make those good decisions about early sexual behavior and drinking and driving and violence and those kinds of things. It's a little bit less expensive. You see the prices on the right, but there is the initial training that schools have to be willing to invest in. This has been recognized across several of the registries, so that tends to support its applicability. And all of these models have the possibility of being adapted to meet the needs of Indigenous students. I'm not sure that Project Toward No Drug Abuse is going to work in the really, really rural school districts just because it was designed for more diverse and more urban settings, but it might be a really good option for the three or four larger school districts. And then the life skills training is shorter. It's only 8 sessions. It's grades 3 through 12. It's a little bit more affordable, and it does cover substance abuse and violence prevention. And it has been recognized by the Department of Justice as well as the Department of Human Health and Human Services as an evidence-based practice, and Washington State is using it. So, I mean, there was a conversation about the good body shop, great body shop, whatever it is, at the beginning. And that one covers all of the topics, including substance abuse. And in talking with parents of kids who've been through that, the education about the substance abuse topics is not just cursory. It's pretty in-depth, and definitely at least his parents talked about how it incited some very interesting dinner table conversations. And so that's one thing to keep in mind, too, is when we're looking at the comprehensive models, are they touching everything with the same depth, or are some things just kind of thrown in there like, oh, yeah, we'll do this, too? And it doesn't seem like that's the case with the Great Body Shop. So, and just for the members of the task force benefit, I looked at 200 and something practices on the registry. Of those, maybe 50 would be considered a curriculum or something that could be implemented in the classroom rather than a prevention program that's more focused on like after school activities or small group activities. And there's a lot of them that were designed and implemented for very specific populations that just did not seem translatable to what we're looking for. And so there are some other things on the NREP that, you know, scored above a 3 and show positive outcomes, but they were only implemented in Erie, Pennsylvania with a 70% African-American population. And so that just doesn't really seem to fit the bill for us. So
but there was a lot of conversation about looking at those and whether they should be on the menu or not. The other thing is I specifically looked for tribally developed models or models that were specific to indigenous populations, American Indian, Alaska Native. I found two, and neither one of them had evaluation information available about implementation with indigenous people. In fact, one of them, Weed and Seed, was developed by Aleutic and Afognak, but it was through a subsidiary in Virginia, and it's never been implemented in Alaska. And so that's why Weed and Seed is not on the list. And then the other one is from a Chippewa tribe in Michigan, and looked very specific to their traditions rather than having some universality around indigenous culture. And so that's why that's not on the list. But I wanted task force members to know that I specifically went digging around looking for something like that, because we do have some things for suicide prevention that have been tribally developed in Alaska and elsewhere. And I just didn't find anything to put on the list. So that's my part of the list.
This is Barbara. Hi, Kate. I have a question for you and anybody, if you know. I'm not always a proponent of having online courses for every single thing. I mean, I think there's so much value in having face-to-face conversations. But are there any options that are online that a student could go through at his or her own pace and not necessarily have to be formally inside of a classroom?
So this is Kate. Well, I can give you an example of something I do with the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District health class. So Amanda Adams is the teacher, and it's a distance-delivered class for students up and down the peninsula. And every year, every semester, she has a one-hour, 90-minute class on substance abuse. And so I present that by distance, and it's typically they use risk behavior survey data. And so, I mean, that's an example of something that's being offered in Alaska by distance. I don't know that it's evidence-based. I mean, I walk through the data with them, and we have question and answer and conversation about what the data means. And so, I mean, I think it could be done. I didn't see anything in the evidence-based registry that is delivered that way. But we could continue to look to see if there are health curricula, like online health curricula, that might cover that.
I would appreciate it only because I think if we're going to recommend curricula, different options of delivery might help in some places more than others. I want it to be valuable and engaging, and I mean some of the discussions are difficult for our students to have, but I guess I'm looking for a variety of methods to deliver this that might make sure that actually gets delivered.
This is Trevor. It sparks a question. Does this legislation, or how does this legislation impact homeschooling, or it doesn't? Is that, like, do those kids have to be educated in the same way the kids that are going to, and or even private school? Does this affect them at all?
They're public schools, so those teachers that are coordinating with parents would have to go through this training.
But
I'm trying to remember
the
legal language as far as how much students have to be instructed in it. It's obviously not a graduation requirement, so is it an instructional requirement? I don't remember. But they are public schools with additional flexibility, intended flexibility for choosing curriculum. But typically that curriculum is chosen, you know, approved by the district, not chosen, but approved by the district. So it's the same quality, basically. But in regards to this, do you remember the legal language of the bill? Does it say that all students will be?
All students K through 12.
Yeah. All students. So whatever the criteria is for all students, I mean, that fits.
And public schools.
So our correspondence programs are public schools. So whatever criteria fits.
So if a parent is the teacher, they're going to have to do the online training?
Not necessarily. I mean,
okay.
You have a teacher of record who says this needs to be taught. The teacher, and that's the certified teacher.
Is supporting the parents.
This is supporting the parents. And so the parents are the actual teachers. The teachers can say, here's the curriculum that's recommended. And if they chose something else, you know, they could go through that process to allow for something else. That's the biggest flexibility, is allowing what curriculum is chosen with correspondence.
And then private schools are somewhat, I'm just trying to...
Totally different. I mean, we have no oversight of private schools.
Okay. So we have no.
So
they just have to, well, private schools just have to meet the graduation standards, though? No?
Nothing. We have no oversight in the private schools. Now, a lot of them do align with calendars. They do align with length of year. They do align with, at least minimally, with graduation requirements. Oftentimes, they're a little bit higher. They might name courses.
Okay.
We don't name courses. We might say 3 credits of math. They may say, you know, I have to. But
okay.
So there's a comparability, but only voluntary.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Learning lesson for Trevor. I appreciate that. Other questions or thoughts? So one of the things we have to figure out is, and we kind of alluded to, how do we want to start, or what is the process to select? So we have our content experts that are presenting this. We could be following the same process as we did with the staffing. Is there the criteria we want to go through? And before we even try to go tackle the decision-making process? So I'm looking to you as task force members of what order or process to get to that selection process would work best for you. So I'm open to ideas.
This is Barbara. I, not being familiar with virtually all of these in any intimate and deep way, I'd like to know if they do meet the criteria before we actually consider them, and to make sure that we have within this list something that would cover everything K through 12 when appropriate, or 7 through 12 when appropriate. Make sure there aren't any gaps, like we've left out a topic for K-3 or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd kind of like to know that before we make any kind of final recommendations.
So I'm hearing from Barb, maybe starting with defining what our criteria is and then relate that to this list.
Mm-hmm.
How do people feel about that as a starting point?
For clarification,
yes.
This is the criteria from the first meeting. Do you
right.
want to revisit it?
Yeah. I'll share it with folks. So, as I always say, silence to me is agreement. So we'll move forward. For those on the phone, what Patty did was on a flip chart, wrote down about 6 or 7, I don't know, criterias that we kind of looked at last meeting. I'm going to read them out. So those on the phone, you may want to write them down so you can remember them all. The first one is cultural relevance. under it is sensitive to urban versus rural. That might tie into cultural relevance, but it may not. Third is appropriate language. Four is evidence-based. Five is cost. Six is age-appropriate. Seven is single versus multi-topic. What was that in seven?
Mm-hmm.
Eight now. Eight is feasibility. And last is flexible / doable. My thoughts are just starting to have discussion around what else for criteria, and then we may want to circle back around and make sure we are defining each of the criteria in the same way. Does that work for folks?
Trevor, this is Kate, and I'm sorry I missed this morning. What's the difference between feasible and doable?
Well, they may be together. They were just written at, each one was identified as different, so we may come down and go, they are the same thing. I'm thinking they are, but I was trying to show the openness to somebody set them separate.
Okay, thank you.
And I see most people's heads nodding, like, yeah, they seem to be the same thing. So most likely that's the way it's going to be.
Trevor, this is...
All right.
Go ahead. This is Samantha in Senator Gardner's office. I just was wondering, last meeting, we reviewed, I think, Laura Eva Yanita Cruz's presentation, and she said it was based on evidence-based, but that program wasn't necessarily evidence-based. It was an Alaska-grown effort. I just wondered, what is the task force's thoughts right now on evidence-based with that program in consideration?
Well, I'm going to take a stab at it, and then task members, please correct me or add to it. So I think the way we're doing this was kind of in layer, was one, the first one was picking evidence-based. If it's evidence-based, then maybe look at the additional criteria. Then kind of that next level is if it's not evidence-based, but it is best practices, and to me, best practices, it's based off of evidence-based, so what Laura Cruz shared would kind of fall under that. And then kind of that third level would be that homegrown, no evidence-based, maybe bringing in some best practices, but really creating their own mindset around it. And we're going to kind of create that, I'll call it a tiered system, for lack of better words. Task members, is that what we're all thinking? That's what I got from our last meeting, and that's how that program would fall under.
Thank you.
That's okay. Patty?
Well, I think that's where the best practices for effective health education come in on that last third tier, is that you look at those characteristics on effective health education, such as the learning objectives and student assessments and a couple more things.
Yeah, this is Laurie. I don't in any way think that we meant this list that we have before us today was the list. It's just a start of a way to winnow things down further, and this is was sort of a easier list to compile because they are evidence-based, and we do have practice with many of them in Alaska. It wasn't to exclude any of those other tiers. We just really aren't there in the conversation yet, at least in my mind. So I think there will definitely be more to come. We're just sort of starting what our recommendations might look like. So I like going through and making sure that we all have the same definitions for the words, and then looking and seeing if we, I like also, Barbara, your idea about making sure we're not missing a grade somewhere, because I think we could be, and then looking if there's any that we would like particular focus on before our next meeting so we could get those materials and start folks going through them.
Sounds good.
Just in thinking about focusing on urban versus rural, is there any way we could have a list of, or another column of whether this has been implemented in rural schools or urban schools?
Well, I'm thinking that pretty well all of these we would somehow create a column for, that these will become part of the grid.
Okay.
So, yes and yes.
And this might be some of the work that gets done in the more thorough review.
Okay.
So I wasn't thinking necessarily going through each one of these words today with each one of these things. In my mind, what I was thinking is we would all agree this is what cultural relevance means. So when we send the people off to look at the more defined work, they would know what we were thinking when we said that. But maybe that's not what we're doing.
I would agree.
Okay.
I don't know if any of us really can answer those questions yet.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
So it's almost like creating, I'll use the word, the chart that we want and how it looks to how best to read it and be able to do that comparison so we can make as well of an informed decision as possible. Is that what we're thinking?
Well, this is Patty. I wanted to clarify for the commissioner. So last time when he wasn't here, there was a rubric which had a scoring component, but I think I might have misunderstood that you wanted more of a matrix, you know.
We're going to get out of scoring.
Off the criteria, yeah.
Yeah. And it could come to the point where this task force, with a lack of, I'm looking at cultural relevance. We may not be the best ones to determine cultural relevance. People in the communities will have the best understanding of that. But we have a sensitivity to that. But unless we see something that's you know, this is not going to work here, we allow it to go forward and allow it to be chosen without us saying, because we're the wrong people to determine if there's something, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't want to set the bar at such a high level that we're determining that it is culturally relevant for all, which would be a little bit
presumptuous.
Presumptuous. I was going to say arrogant, but presumptuous.
I would go with that one
so,
as well.
So anyway, as we're going through these, I want us to just kind of keep in mind we definitely need a sensitivity to that.
Mm-hmm.
Good point.
But also recognizing that we don't necessarily have the skill set to truly determine, but by putting it here, it allows it to be determined at the local level.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's start at the top and work our way down, since we brought it up. One, do we see cultural relevance, urban/rural, separate, or do we think those go together? Any preference or thoughts?
This is Kate.
Go for it.
And I think that our default idea of cultural relevance is Western versus Indigenous, and so that leads to the idea that it's rural and urban. But what we know is that in Anchorage and increasingly in Fairbanks and Juneau and some other school districts, diversity is beyond Western and Indigenous. And so I think cultural relevance needs to be separate from geography so that school districts that have populations not only from different ethnic groups, but also, I mean, you've got some like in Anchorage, I mean, you have some immigrant populations that, I mean, there's a difference between being a new immigrant and being somebody who's been here a while but is from a certain ethnicity. And so I think that keeping them separate and specifically saying that cultural relevance is not limited to Western versus or Western and Indigenous culture. It's reflective of the cultures present in the school district, all cultures.
I'm seeing a lot of head noddings of agreement.
And maybe that's, Commissioner, what you were getting at or what I'm thinking. It's not our job to say if it's culturally relevant or not, but I think it's our responsibility to recommend to the department those curricula that include, that have that comprehensive view, so that they're not going to be, you know, I'm not going to pick curricula A, and all it does is look right at Barbara. But I'm going to pick curricula A because it takes into account you and Patty as well. So I like separating them, and I like thinking about it in terms of not so much this appeals to Hispanics or Filipino or Alaska Native, but it's written through the lens of each culture is, you know, full of integrity in and of itself. It's not something that is we're going to pigeonhole to a specific group of people.
Commissioner?
So with that said, I think that urban-rural gets rolled into cultural relevant. I mean, so I don't think you need a separate urban-rural, because if you're culturally relevant, you're relevant across,
to your community.
Across cultural, you're, you know, based on where you live, based on the community that you have. It's almost redundant because when I think what Kate said, that when we talk urban-rural, we're really, people oftentimes think, oh, cultural difference.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think cultural relevance incorporates urban-rural and seems to be, I don't know that we need the second one. But.
I think in terms of cost, there might be a difference. You know, a school with 10 students might want to pick a certain curriculum
mm-hmm.
because of the small number of students.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense. So, you know, yeah, I was looking at the curriculum now, but considering the cost, if we only pick things that worked well when it was scaled up,
maybe that's
true.
Well, and if we capture that in the concept, making sure our costs are more, a little more specific, we'll be able to figure some of that stuff out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have any problem leaving them.
Mm-hmm. So, Kate, would you be fine if what the commissioner, I'm leaning towards that as well and kind of incorporating that cultural relevance the way you've talked about it and encapsulate the urban-rural because it's based off of the community versus having them separate?
Oh, no, I think that's great.
Okay. So having those together, that will be our first one. How do we... Do we have a concept of cultural relevance? How are we going to, I guess, define it in such a way that I agree with the commissioner that we don't make assumptions and be presumptuous, but at the same time, giving it some level of value in our decision-making process? And Kate and Lori, you kind of reviewed these things, and especially you, Kate, you really went into detail about yours, of what communities were involved and what wasn't. Do you have recommendations based off of how you were doing it that we could define it?
This is Kate, and I mean, I just looked at the school districts, the demographics of the school districts where they were implemented, and it wasn't that hard because in the NREP it's actually in there. Like, they break it out, you know, 42% African American, 37% Hispanic, 27% white, whatever. And so, like, looking at that breakdown, if there were no American Indian or Alaska Native, or if it was predominantly just one ethnicity, then when I looked at the implementation, the journal articles about the evaluation of the implementation, if it didn't include anybody else, if it was very specific to one culture, then I just didn't put it on the list because if it hadn't been replicated with other kinds of populations, it didn't feel like it would work for us. So, I mean, I don't know that there was anything scientific about it other than just reading the information and
me making kind of a gut reaction, you know, if this was just, you know, tailored to one demographic. So, like, for example, there's a model that's evidence-based called Keeping It Real that we talked about. And one of the reasons it's not on your list is because it's very narrowly tailored to Hispanic and Latina populations. And its build is multicultural, but when you actually look at it, it's still very narrowly tailored. And, I mean, maybe that would work in Anchorage, I don't know. But I'm not sure that that would work anywhere else. So that's why it's not on the list. So it wasn't super scientific. It was more just looking at the information and kind of drawing a conclusion myself.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Well, Trevor.
Hi there.
Hi there. Hey, I just thought I would just kind of chime in that the schools in my area are the most diverse schools, and Mountain View is the most diverse neighborhood in the United States. So, you know, kind of the breakdown is interesting that it's about 20% white, 20% black, 20% Alaska Native, 20% Hmong and Southeast Asian, and then about 20% Pacific Islander. And then, you know, there's much smaller populations of Sudanese refugees and, you know, refugees from the Middle East, some, you know, smaller sort of pockets. But what I've seen in those schools and just, you know, working with those schools and doing substitute teaching is a lot of the approach has been just to be very multicultural, and that's how they make things culturally relevant. So they don't have, for example, like a Christmas event, but they have a series of events or a celebration that includes recognition of the Hmong New Year and Kwanzaa and all of the different cultural celebrations that happen this time of year.
Right. Well, I'm wondering with this, because it might get hard to define, is that maybe kind of what Kate did was, if we're looking at curriculum under cultural, and maybe it's, we use the word relevance or sensitivity, but maybe it's just a column and we outline, because they're evidence-based, what was the breakdown or what communities, what cultural groups were involved in the study. So we just know that, and then we can look and go, it was just one, or it had everybody but, it, rather than it being a specific checkoff or definition. I think we all get cultural relevance as what was the diversity of the group involved and that's being targeted. Would that be helpful rather than trying to create something that's checked or X'd?
It is going to be hard to just do a check.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that needs to be a narrative. All right. So we're just going to leave it as narrative of what cultural communities were represented in the study, because it was evidence-based.
And I appreciate, and I hadn't realized it, but I appreciate the work that Kate's already done to say why things weren't on the list.
Yeah.
Because it already seemed, so thank you, Kate, for doing that and being sensitive to that right off the bat.
So urban-rural got rolled in, so our new number two is appropriate language. What does that mean?
And I'm wondering if it merges with age appropriate. Because I guess they may be different, but they may be connected. So.
Thoughts?
Well, I went right there, just thinking of age and grade appropriate is
mm-hmm.
what the
mm-hmm.
language there says, and it seems kind of like a... of course it would be, you know, that's all we want. You know, that's what we want is age and grade appropriate. So I don't know if there's something different that's implied there.
Yeah, this is Patty, and I think Senator McKinnon had a concern also. So it can be tied to age appropriate, but it can also be tied to just terminology. So, for instance, the term good touch, bad touch is no longer used, or language that's victim blaming. So the best people to probably look at that would be like Lori Staff
mm-hmm.
to make sure that the terminology is the most
mm-hmm.
correct.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe we change that, because when I first saw it, I'm like, do they use appropriate language? I was thinking, like, is it, if you talk about human anatomy, using the correct wording versus slang, or and or just getting into, do you even talk about the body or not? What's appropriate language? That's where my mind went
that,
to.
That is another
part of it.
And I don't know who, again, I think that's really hard to judge, because in one community, they're using every word that you can possibly think of, whereas another is like, we don't even talk about the body and everything in between. And again, the idea of creating a list is to provide communities the opportunity to pick a curriculum at the point of where they're at versus trying to force something on somebody. So maybe change appropriate language to, I don't want to say appropriate just seems wrong, but appropriate terminology, what is the catchphrase for speaking the appropriate terminology when we're on a specific topic? I've heard people use it.
Not politically correct.
Even that is a sensitive word. Yeah, let's add politics into this.
I was thinking, in part, it's accurate information.
Yeah.
I don't think that
accurate
is the term that you're going for, but we want to make sure that whatever is being recommended really is accurate. And either if it's parts of the body or
whatever
terms that are used in the field that are recognized and valid and reliable. But so there is an accuracy element for me in looking at that. But I know that's not what you're looking for.
But that adds to it. How do we sum that up? What's the
recognized, accepted?
How about industry accepted language? I've heard that.
Well,
Kate?
Trevor. Oh, that's Garen.
Garen, sorry, wrong voice.
I mean, I know a lot of times people say, you know, sort of medically accurate, scientifically accurate, something like that. And I know that conversation came up with curriculum related to the child sexual abuse prevention and, you know, people having sort of some confusion with what that meant, you know, and it means personal body safety, not sex ed, you know? And so, anyhow, I think it just needs to be clear that it's about, you know, that they would get that accurate kind of information for those purposes rather than, you know, have any other elements. Does that make sense?
Well, and I think whatever word we come, then we add that definition of all the key points that we just mentioned. So it's clear, because I don't know if we're going to capture something that's just clear to everybody. So what we have, what was the one that I came up with?
Industry accepted.
Terminology. What was Representative Tarr's? It was science.
Scientifically.
And medically.
Scientific or medical. That might be a little too specific, but we've heard some examples. Is anybody leaning towards one or another suggestion? So we can have that, and then we'll add the definition to it.
Well, whatever we choose, I want to make sure that it also incorporates, I don't like the word unbiased, but it also incorporates, you know, that lack of blaming, you know, that victim. So I want to make sure that whatever term is, it can allow for us to consider the fact that it's not going to be.
Let's make sure it's in the definition, sir.
Okay.
I absolutely agree.
No incendiary language.
So this is Kate.
Which it actually tends to put blame somewhere.
Is that you now, Kate?
Yeah. It is. I mean, it sounds like what we want is language that is credible, objective, and effective. And so, I mean, I think that that takes, I mean, if your language is objective, then you're not blaming victims. You're also not blaming people that use drugs. I mean, what we see in a lot of
attempts to do education around substance abuse is language about junkies and, you know, potheads and things like that. And, I mean, that doesn't help. And so what we're looking for is credible, effective, and objective language.
And that definitely would be all, if you went with the concept of industry, I can't remember what I even came up with, how good it was. And then add your statement, but also put it non-blaming. I think using those words is very key, because not everybody you can have somebody blaming somebody, they think they're being very objective. And I think all of us agree that we want to make sure it's non-blaming, which really ties into that trauma and resiliency side of things. And I think it will be very beneficial to spell that out.
Cool.
Because I've heard that from several people on this task force. Okay. Are we comfortable with that for language side? Since I'm going to jump down, since it ties in with the language side, we were talking about age appropriate. I think my suggestion would just go age, get rid of the word appropriate, because that is subjective, and that maybe on this matrix we list it kind of like have K 1, 2, 3 to 12, and you do the X for the grades that it relates to, so you can see. So you're not always looking for K to 5 or K to 8. You can actually see it visually. Would that be helpful for the folks? And does that capture the age side? Go by grade versus age.
I think that would be helpful, but I'm not sure if it captures, is the curriculum using the right terminology for the right age and the right concept?
Can they comprehend?
The other thing I want to make sure that whatever we say for stakeholders who aren't a part of this process here, that you're not teaching sex ed to my kindergartner, that you're not, because that came up and it was reaffirmed over and over again. No, we're talking about age appropriate. So whatever term we use, I don't want to lose that confidence from people who are seeing this work.
Thank you.
Somehow hearing something different.
Yeah, I think it's okay to keep age appropriate. I think almost everybody has a fairly base understanding of what that means. They, you know, age appropriate, if it's something you're going to be talking about to a 5-year-old, is way different than something you're going to be talking about to a 15-year-old. And I think people generally get that. So I think if we tried to say too much different, it would be more confusing than it would be clarifying.
Okay.
I think.
Do we want to go by, in the sense of age appropriate, try to rate it by the grade? For example, because you guys have like grade level, K through 6.
Right.
And actually just so K, 1, 2, 3, down all the way to 12. And then what you do is you put an X in each of the grades that it relates to. Would that cover us for age appropriate? What would you suggest? Barbara, you're shaking your head no. What are you thinking?
On one hand, I do want to know what grades we have covered with these curricula. So in case we, oops, there's no 4 that we need to go elsewhere. But the age appropriate is actually looking at the concepts that are being delivered in each age to determine that they are, I want to say, developmentally appropriate for the age, developmentally or some other term appropriate for, that you're not talking sex ed in kindergarten. Just somebody's got to look at that.
Well, question for us, and I don't know the answer to this. One, if it's already checked off as evidence-based, do we feel that the age appropriateness, so if they're saying it works for grade 5, what age is that approximately? What's grade?
Kindergarten.
Grade 5 is kindergarten?
Oh, grade 9 is at age 5.
No.
9 years old?
9 or 10. So if they say grade 5, then I'm assuming that the research made sure that it was age appropriate. That's automatic. However, if it's best practices or homegrown, that's separate. So is that an appropriate assumption with evidence-based programs or no?
Do we know what the criteria are for
age
the,
appropriate?
There, do we know that if it's on the list, evidence-based list, that was one of the considerations?
I can't believe it wouldn't have been.
Yeah. I would say it has to be. For them to be able to say it's for this grade level, they had to make it age appropriate, and they were specifically looked at. I just couldn't imagine it not being.
And there's CDC guidelines that can guide some of that, and also with your commercial vendors here that have professional health educators, they're going to know that too. So probably, like you said, the homegrown. The other thing I wanted to say, though, is at some point the task force also needs to look at developmentally appropriate, so the, the needs of special education.
Right. We'll need to add that maybe. So I'm wondering, with if it's evidence-based, we feel very secure saying age-appropriate for whatever they've listed. If it is anything other than evidence-based, the age-appropriateness, somebody would have to review it, and I think it would be a narrative evaluation of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any disagreement with that? What do you think, Barbara?
I don't disagree. I guess I just feel more comfortable if I knew that were one of the criteria in the evidence.
We can check. We'll
we can check.
Check
it.
That's all.
No.
Let's check.
Please, always, if you're not feeling comfortable, always push back. We want to know, yeah, for the evidence-based side. Okay. So evidence-based is if it is on, what's the list called? Is there more than one list?
There are many lists. So on a recognized registry could be.
So, perfect. It's on a recognized registry, and it's a check. Anybody in disagreement with that? Cost, we kind of spoke about it in the sense of if we can have one approximate cost, give a little more detail, like when it's, we say a bundle, what is a bundle, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then at all possible, if we can have concept of the projection, if every school district did this, what would that look like for that overall cost as well?
Mm-hmm.
Anything else on cost that people can think of that they would want to know?
I guess it might be included already if you're doing it, whether it's one time or ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
A year, but I'm assuming that's kind of built in.
Really build that into the narrative side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Some of them don't have, but like Great Body Shop, $7 per child per year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll be helpful.
Trevor, this is.
Go ahead.
This is Kate, and I think even though it's not a financial cost, understanding how much of your teacher, your educator, and staff time is needed to get trained up in the curriculum is probably important, because I know earlier in the day there was conversation about a four-day training, and some of these, I mean, it may be more intensive for the teachers to be trained up to implement the curriculum than others. And I mean, then there are costs, both tangible and intangible, associated with that.
So could we, do we want it on a cost, or would you guys actually like to see, we're going to have a nice legal-sized piece of paper by the time we're done, but a column that says implementation requirements. I don't know if maybe that's the right, but that's the teacher training or anything else that has to happen. Somebody has to go to D.C. That's where the training happens, you know, implementation requirements. Does that capture that? And anything else that might be related to it? Or are we thinking something different or different terminology?
No, I think that would work.
I do too.
Okay. We did age, single versus multi-topic. We already talked about that we would take the core topic areas and make. Was that a knock for my attention?
No.
Oh, your phone. Oh, I'm like, yes, sir. Just raise your hand. sorry, that the topic
column would be broken out by the court topics so we could actually see those. Let's make sure we're all on the same page for what those topics would be. So we have child sexual abuse. We have teen violence. We have substance abuse. Other ones that we may want to include is bullying, healthy relationships,
suicide.
Thank you. Do we see personal safety as a completely separate topic versus, because I think it all is personal safety?
Yeah.
Agreed.
Okay.
General term meaning child sexual abuse in this context.
Making sure. What other topic areas do we want to see listed? And do know we only have three that are mandated, but what others might pop up that might be helpful? Patty?
Two mandated,
sorry. Thank you for that correction. It's the third that is just recommended on the substance, but what else? Anything else?
I think that's enough to be listed because we can always have other and then write something in.
If something pops up.
If it's something else.
Okay. And our next is feasibility, flexible / doable. We think that's all one. Do we need that as a column? Or to me, that is when we look at all those other things, that's when we decide, is this even a feasible or desired product that we want?
I would think if you didn't check that, it wouldn't be on the list.
Right.
I mean, if we've gone through these other things, we've determined that it's feasible and it's flexible enough to meet needs, it's doable. Mm-hmm. It sort of seems that it's the answer to the rest of the questions, so it's not a separate.
And the only reason I want to make that, I think the feasible and doable, yeah, we're already looking at the flexibility. I guess I'm looking at the delivery methods, whether there's only one way to deliver or whether there are options for...
Can it be adapted?
Yeah, and so that's where I...
Good example is Kate, when she presented on reconnecting youth, must follow, it was pretty well, like 99%, it's not feasible, it's...
Fidelity. It's with fidelity.
Or you get bad results. So some programs mm-hmm. talk about there's flexibility where more is more stringent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, question, do they talk about that much, or is that, do they talk about that in their programs? So how did you learn about that, Kate?
So I didn't find it in the marketing material from the creators. What I found it in was in the evaluations, where the evaluators said, you know, one of the reasons it didn't work as well in this school is because they didn't implement it with fidelity. They didn't have consistent participation from the students and blah, blah, blah. I did not see that in the Reconnecting Youth marketing material.
So maybe rather than calling it flexible, is usually adaptable, and it may be also a narrative if we can find anything on it, like Kate did.
And I go back to some of the conversations from the first two meetings that I think I'm remembering about how districts would have the flexibility to deliver this information in different ways, whether it be online or an assembly or some other big group event or integrated into the health class or some other class. So, I mean, I think districts are thinking they are going to have some flexibility in how they deliver the information and meet the requirements of the law. And I look at a lot of these that seem to say, well, you've got 21 lessons, so it's got to be integrated into some daily activity. And I don't know that districts are expecting just to have that kind of option.
Maybe we call it mode of delivery / adaptability, because it captures what you said plus that flexibility. Does that work for folks? And again, that's going to be a narrative side of things.
You're thinking, Laura?
I am thinking.
I like it.
I am thinking. I agree with that, and I also think that fidelity is important, and it's not necessary. And so some of them are flexible in that you, if it says A, B, and C, you can say A, B and a half, and C. Some of them are not flexible. If it says A, B, and C, point one, you have to do A, B, and C, point one, or it doesn't work. Whereas to me, sort of what you were mentioning is more flexible in, well, we're going to pick this one, and it's 12 sessions, so we got to find 12 weeks, as opposed to maybe we'll pick this one, and it's only the one that's twice a year. I mean, you know, so flexibility and delivery is different from flexibility or adaptation in the content, which some allow for and some don't. So I think maybe school districts would want to know which ones allow for that and which ones don't.
So I'm hearing from you, it would be nice to have those as separate columns.
Yeah, because it might make a difference about whether or not I'm going to pick that one if I can wiggle room some or if it has to be what it is.
Other thoughts around that?
I think flexibility also goes back to time of educators. And like we said before, the fourth arc requires 4 days of training.
The green dot does.
Green dot, sorry.
That's okay.
And so including that, how much time dedication it requires,
mm-hmm.
important.
So let's separate those two things out. All right, we are slightly over by 25 minutes.
Break.
We're going to do a break. Before I do it, is there any criteria that you would want to see that we have not discussed or has not been encapsulated with any of the others? Okay. Thank you for that. So, again, to remind people, we're moving from the concept of rubrics to the criteria. We're going to hopefully take what we have and place that in this and see how that starts to look so we have it. And can we do a quick 5-minute break?
Mm-hmm.
Does that work for everybody so we can make sure we're out of here by 4? Because, you know, we have a plane to catch at 8. All right.
To be there by 7:30.
We can get out. All right. 5-minute break. Thank you. Nobody listened to the 5 minutes. Just give us a moment.
Maybe Kate didn't either. Are you there, Kate?
Yes, ma'am.
Good for you.
All the phone people are there. We would move ahead, but Patty, who takes all of her notes, is in here, so I think Commissioner Henley's still trying to read what he's supposed to talk about.
So, Kate, I think you're brave to get on a plane that had a mechanical for that long.
Well, you know, I have no idea what the problem was. They didn't tell us, but it took like 2 seconds to fix once the part came, but the part had to come from Anchorage.
So they
took us off the plane.
I got so many sensors. One of those things go off, a part has to be changed. So.
Yeah.
They change parts all the time, you know, Lori.
Yeah.
Where were you that they had to change?
Here.
Oh.
I was supposed to be there, but I had to be in Anchorage for a meeting later this afternoon.
And so the plan was to fly up early, get here, get settled, and do the meeting. And then all the best laid plans went kaplooey this morning.
Oh, so we probably walked right by you in the airport then, or were you stuck on the plane?
I think I was already on the plane when you guys got off.
Okay.
I got on one a few weeks ago, and sorry, we got a flat tire.
Oh.
I'll be back off. Half an hour later, they had a tire change.
Yes, they do. All right, where did Patty go? We need her for notes.
We need her for guidance, because I can't.
The last time I was on a plane that got delayed, what took the longest was to get the final paperwork. Like,
yeah.
We were sitting there for over, I don't know, half hour, 45 minutes waiting on paperwork.
The pilot forgets the key. She's going, oh, crap.
Okay, we're just waiting for paperwork. Nah, you know how they say, is there a doctor? Anybody know how to hotwire a car? Please come on up. All right.
You just reach under the jug, right?
Yeah, exactly. Grab one of the wires. There's only a couple. All right, Patty's back.
I know Barbara had a phone call. She got caught.
All right. Well, we're going to turn over the next section to Commissioner Henley. Curriculum
Patty.
Considerations.
Patty, lead us.
Oh, seriously, you're going to delegate?
So this is what you guys have been doing. This is revisiting this as in terms of what people's expectations are and how they visually want to see and review things.
Mm-hmm. So we already did his job for him.
We did.
That's how good we are, Lori.
We're good.
I know. We're fantastic.
And I think if it's a matrix you want to see with check boxes.
Yeah, we'll start.
We've had many kind of iterations of similar information gathering, but it hasn't been
right.
In a nice, readable form.
Well, we'll go for that. All right. Well, we have that part done then. So what I would love us to maybe use a little bit of time. Last meeting, we talked about public testimony. We didn't put it on the agenda. Mainly because when Patty met with me about agenda, I didn't think of public testimony. But one of the things that we talked about in our last meeting was specifically not just having open public testimony, but having intentional testimony on either a court topic or a question that we have. So, for example, we specifically invited the Association of School Boards to get their perspective of what they see for implementation to really help guide our work. So I really wanted to have an open discussion around when we have public testimony, what is or are the questions we would like people to respond to, and potentially if there's great number of questions that we may then want to specifically in different meetings have the public testimony around those, or maybe all public testimonies at least have these basic questions that we want people to answer. And the purpose of that was to minimize people coming in letting us know how important this law is. We already know it's passed, or giving us stats. We already know that. Or to try to come and sell a curriculum that we've already either looked at or not interested in and so forth, and that we actually get something out of it versus us sitting looking at our phones. So with that said, opening it up to thoughts of public testimony, what are the question or questions you wish people to answer? And then there's silence.
I liked Mr. Wooten's idea of hearing from the statewide PTA, and I like the similar set of questions. I think it was a good, you know, it worked out well, and it was sort of hit what I wanted to know, which is what would work, how would it work? If we want to talk to teachers, it might be nice to find out, to confirm what they're already doing. we know as staff training what they're already doing, but we don't know everywhere what they're doing with some of the curricula for kids.
And Trevor?
Yes, ma'am.
We also have invited Lisa Parody from the Superintendent Association of School Administrators, and they couldn't come this time, but they'd like to next time, mm-hmm. either someone from our board or...
I'd rather have somebody from our board.
Yeah.
Only because they're the practitioners.
Yeah.
They're actually the superintendent. It doesn't even have to be from their board. And
mm-hmm.
Norm said I can give you 8 or 9
yeah.
superintendents. Lisa represents them, but why not just get them?
Yeah, I like that.
So it's kind of, Lisa does a good job of summarizing, but
let's hear from them.
Let's hear firsthand.
Yeah.
And it would be great to actually have a couple of them back-to-back.
Yes.
So just to remind, so there's a couple things. The people that we invite to talk, and then there's public testimony where I know I've been reached out by a few people going, how do we participate in this task force? How do we share our knowledge and so forth? And I'm like, well, you can't be a member. We're looking at public testimony. Those people may be invited if we identify who we want a specific presentation from. But public testimony is usually 2 to 3 minutes,
mm-hmm.
where these guys are getting 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So let's, because you kind of went down the path on presentations, and we're going to stay on that, and then I'll circle back around to the original public testimony. So kind of who... Just to share with you some of the ideas that you shared last time, as well as maybe some things that popped up in discussion, was statewide PTA association. So we want parents. Superintendent association, specific actual superintendent. Native leader, looking at counselor, school nurse, principal or principals, any other groups that you would want to hear from potentially, or groups that maybe deal with these topics?
We talked about a special, the Christine King.
Mm-hmm. For disabilities, the developmentally.
And who was that?
Christine King.
Who else?
Then you had Pam Carolunas.
Child sexual abuse. Children's Alliance. That was Pam.
I don't remember anybody.
What do you guys think about the Children's Justice? What's the A? They are related. They're under OCS. They get funding. What are they called? Let's see if I can find their email.
Separate from
are you that? Talking about the Citizens Review Panel?
No.
Okay.
It's another group. It's Children's Justice Act Task Force, under OCS. They look at maltreatment, including child sexual abuse. They may have some thoughts around this. They deal with reporting, training. They create the online training for individuals around mandatory reporting and so forth. They can also just be included in public testimony if you don't want to hear from them direct. Which one would you prefer?
I don't have a strong preference either way. I think maybe public testimony would be fine.
Okay. Anybody else that we want to see presentation? Of course, as we go along, we can always add. do we want to be specific in the sense of having, well, maybe with superintendents, it would be helpful to have one rural, one big?
Yes.
Probably already thinking that, but just to put it out there. Just taking my notes so I can remember. And maybe we can kill two birds with one stone. Patty, you were suggesting having Fairbanks because they implemented Aaron's Law.
Yeah, they should be.
Prior. Do we see that superintendent being the urban and they could talk about that plus, or do you want to see that as a separate discussion?
I'd make that the urban. I mean, because she's a strong superintendent. She can speak what Norm said to you. She can speak to the challenges of implementation, but also the fact that they have implemented.
Right.
And
I like
the impacts
that.
Of that implementation. So.
Great. And I think asking those people those three questions that you asked Norm is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So now public testimony is anybody. So people, we make this public. Anybody comes to speak for 2 to 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Again, to keep it focused, do we get them to try to answer those three questions in 2 to 3 minutes as a guide, or do we want something more specific? Thoughts?
So this is Kate, and if you look at the state policy that's articulated in the Open Meetings Act, it actually is very heavily weighted towards the public's ability to speak whatever they want to speak to government. And so, especially if we're going to have these presentations on specific topics identified by task force members, I think that the ability for the general public to listen and then participate in the meeting should be pretty open.
Okay.
I think that with that in mind, we're looking for input from the communities, the task force is particularly interested in these areas.
Mm-hmm.
Your input on, so it's open to whatever they want to say, but, if we can,
we can say we encourage you to please highlight or talk about these things, but obviously they can talk about anything.
Right.
Senator McKinnon's texting me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously we're not trying to restrict them, but if there are things we're looking for,
right.
Previous experience with any of these curricula, interest in or the importance of implementing these into your child's school, concerns you may have. We're not going to stop them if they want to talk about anything they want.
So does everybody agree maybe put public testimony at the beginning of the meeting and set aside – I'm not thinking we're going to have a lot. I'm going to put 15 minutes, but if somehow we get a room full, we'll have to adjust our schedule. Or do we think at least put 30 so we're not backed up?
I'd go 20, 25, or 30.
I guess 30.
All it takes is five people, and you can't get it in 15 minutes, just the minute in between and all that.
Very true. Thank you.
It's about four people.
So we'll do, depending on how many people, it'll be either 2 to 3 minutes and – we'll always make the first 30 minutes public testimony.
I think that's safe.
Okay.
You're much better off only going 20 and squeezing the rest of the conversation.
All right.
And you can also say at the beginning of the meeting that you would, or prior to the meeting under the public notice, that if anybody hasn't shown up in the first 10 minutes, then you're going to move forward. Like we don't have to leave. We researched this with the council for a while. You don't have to sit there the whole 30 minutes if nobody has shown up.
Well, you sign up by
9:05
or whatever it is.
Right. So you just let people know that ahead of time, and then you don't have to hold the space open. You can just move along.
Okay. Anything else on those two topics? Then... we're a really good task force. We're going to ahead of ourselves. So let's work out maybe just agenda for, am I saying January 15th meeting? Is that correct?
Yes, and we're looking at the two LIOs again, Anchorage and Juneau, but that's up to you if you want it. Video conferenced again or?
Well, the only people that will be Anchorage, because all your representatives will be here, is the two lovely people on Lori's left and right. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
You might as well come down again.
When does session start?
The following week.
Is everybody else going to be down, do we know?
The 15th, I'd ask Senator McKinnon because she was kind of on the fence of if she'd still be there or here.
Okay.
But this is Kate, and I know that the senator will be in Anchorage, or is at least planning on being in Anchorage the 11th and 12th, because that's when the Suicide Prevention Council is meeting in Anchorage. So I don't know if she'll be coming down later in the week or not, but I know at least at the beginning of the week she'll be in Anchorage.
January 15th.
And this is Samantha. I do believe Senator Gardner will be in Juneau by January 15th.
Great. You have a look on your face, Commissioner? Okay. You had no idea what your schedule was, did you?
No, you were. Oh, I was aware of that.
Yeah.
We'll work you out.
No, that's fine. I mean, that's.
And we have a schedule February or March, and I don't know how to do that.
Well, we'll talk about that next. So it is the 15th. We'll tentatively make it here, and we'll be able to come down. Let's send that out. Basically, everybody will be here. We don't know about Representative Millett or Representative
Edgman.
Thank you. But we'll let them know, and it's going to be close. If not, either way, we're going to be doing by phone or video. So we could set it up, but we could at least the majority of us be here in person. Okay. Patty, let's figure that out, because we can also, because of some of this work, remind me, let's talk about GoToMeeting. So if there's documents, you guys have Wi-Fi access and all that, right? So we can have documents up, and people can be looking at them at the same time and potentially video if necessary. So we can work that out, and that might help the conversations versus just telephone. Soon I can work that out. So agenda for next meeting, obviously the first 30 minutes is going to be public testimony. Let's talk about who would like presentations from. Again, our list, we have on schedule already Pam with the Children's Alliance talking about child sexual abuse and recommended curriculum, and she'll be working with me on that. That's usually 30 minutes. Who else from our list would you like to hear from that meeting?
I think the superintendent, since they were going to be here today and weren't available. So.
Well, we'll need to work. That was Lisa, was it?
No. But we're getting a list from
Norm.
Mr. Wooten.
Norm.
Yeah, I think so.
Superintendent.
We can have them all coordinate.
All right. So we'll do the superintendent. Okay.
Then the staff training with dating violence and the child abuse will have more specific info.
Great.
Maybe about 30 minutes for staff training.
And child sexual abuse for staff training as well?
Mm-hmm.
So do you have those, Patty?
Yeah.
And I'm kind of liking our order doing the staff training and presentation. Okay. And then we'll probably want to look over that matrix that we're creating.
Mm-hmm. And maybe then with these considerations, maybe we'll be able to pick five, or I'm making a number up, seven.
Right.
So that we can then go back and, for example, I could have my staff look at whichever ones are going to be on dating violence. So she can get the materials, read through everything, and at our
maybe our next meeting after that. I mean, does that sound reasonable as a way to...
Yeah, let's see what it looks like.
Try to start picking some.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a full agenda.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
If we're, well, usually ahead. Maybe if we can do 10:30 to 4:30, because if we grab the morning flight, mm-hmm. it just gives us time because we were late.
That makes sense.
If we can. Save us from having flying the night before.
Mm-hmm. You know, maybe one time in Anchorage, maybe not necessarily this meeting since it's in Juneau, but if either one of us, whichever way we fly back and forth, aren't going to catch a flight until 8 or 9, then maybe we could have an hour and a half or an hour for public testimony after work.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way it's set up now, there's going to be people, maybe parents, who would want to say something but can't get off in the middle of the day to, or the middle of the morning to
Good
say
point.
Anything.
Yeah.
Or I guess if you teleconference, it doesn't really matter where we have the meeting to do that. But we just may not always want to have it
in
the morning.
Yeah.
Thank you. I agree. Anything else on agenda for our January, I should say, meeting. So let's talk schedule, if that works for folks. So are we thinking meeting February? Let's see, so if we're talking 15th.
You know, it may be that it would be less changes if we, well, they still won't have the schedule out on January 15th. It's going to be hard to know anybody's schedule in February and March until we know when at least the budget hearings are set up.
When is that?
I'll tell you that Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays tend to be busier.
Mm-hmm.
Just generally speaking, we tend to be pretty consistent with Monday morning, Wednesday morning, Friday mornings for different committees.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. You really can't tell until the committees come down here and say, okay, here's where we're meeting.
Can we do some tentative dates, though? Yeah. It works for me because I'm amazed at how my calendar books up 3 months in advance.
Yeah.
So at least we're holding it. And even if we hold a three-day period
mm-hmm.
and then narrow it down, it would just be helpful,
mm-hmm.
definitely for Patty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So... we meet the 15th. Do we want, if we looked at that first week of February, that's 2 weeks after, is that too soon?
I think so.
Are we thinking?
Maybe more the middle of February.
I'm in Ketchikan the week of the 22nd. So...
the whole week?
Yeah, well, most of it, but I'm thinking that's like a month away, or is that too far apart? Because I could do the end. I could do like Thursday or Friday.
Maybe Thursday, if Fridays are generally busy, maybe Thursday would be better.
So that's Thursday the
25th?
I'm not saying much, but only because my calendar is wide open. Dance card is free.
Sweet. I love easy people like you, Barbara.
I'm going to pass off some of my events for you.
Do you mind representing me at some of these things?
I'm going to share with you.
So is the 25th too far out? It works nice just for my flight schedule, since I know I have to come through to know.
I think it would be good because if we are narrowing things down at the January meeting, for then our staff to actually go through the materials. Who knows how long it's going to take to actually get the materials and then go through them. I think that makes sense.
Okay. So let's do that and send it out to the Kate and Samantha. I don't know if you know Senator Gardner's schedule. Obviously, that can be up in the air, but does that work for you, Kate?
As far as I know, yes. I mean, once the session starts, everything kind of goes to you know where in a handbasket, but I've got all of these dates on my calendar now.
All right, so we're going to hold the 25th, and, of course, in January when we get closer, we'll always be checking in. Do we want to at least try to do March?
It would just really be a guess on my part. I can't.
Do we want to wait for the – we've got February and then January.
Wait until January.
Sounds good. So we'll hold the 25th, and then we'll work out March as we get closer.
But you know when you can in March, right? Because isn't there a council meeting?
And there's a board meeting. No, there's a council meeting. And well, it's a good thing you said that out loud. There's a council meeting in February, which I think – is on the
25th.
Oh. Are we back to
the
25th
dear.
Now?
We are. I think it's the 20. Let me confirm the dates.
We can always bump it up and do
oh,
the 18th.
I think it is.
Or something that week.
But I think it is.
It is.
Is it then? The 25th, 26th?
It's the 24th and 25th.
Okay. So I could do the 26th, Friday.
Well, I can do that as well, but Fridays get iffy. But if we're starting a bit later, and if we think about testimony and all that kind of stuff, it might not interfere with you too much, Commissioner. How do you feel about that?
Which one is that?
If we 26. Moved it to the 26th versus the 25th.
The Friday.
Yeah, best I can tell. I mean, it's...
We can give you a note and say you're sick so you can miss those meetings.
And a lot of times, honestly, I mean, it's a meeting first thing in the morning.
Yeah. Okay. Then let's go with the 26th.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No. Like you're the only one who's gone through. Oh, yeah, that's on my calendar.
Oh, 10:30. Tell you.
10:30, yeah. Yeah. Hey, I got this weird invite, and I figured out like 24 hours that I had to go and present.
Uh-oh.
Like, how we changed my schedule. I did not get it on my calendar whatsoever. All right. So it's 26 for those on the phone. Wrap up. So we are done early. Yay, go team.
Yay.
Really very productive. We actually got to do a vote and got down with criteria. Very functional. So I just want to thank you all for participating and being so active. And I know it's very hard on the phone, but yet I found that everybody's quite active. So thank you very much. And we will get the agenda out and notes out. Is there anything that people can think that we need to continue this work and you wish we had, but we just don't have it? Anything that you could use? All right. Anybody else with any last words? Or we'll say happy Monday. Monday.
It is just Monday. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank
happy
you.
Monday. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Do we want to make sure this gets passed around and we can just...